Tuesday night. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And I may have eaten some Bono beef a little bit too fast. I'm about ready for a nap now. The folks from JDRF will be joining us and talking about how they have partnered with Bona Beef. We look forward to talking to Mimi Crabtree, who is the executive director of JDRF. And I was walking over here tonight. I did an interview over the weekend with Angela Bassett, who was trying to spread the word about the link. She was great and dazzling, of course. And I couldn't stop looking at her going, how are you 60? She's gorgeous.
Extremely classy. I mean, just a class act on screen and off screen, she seems.
She's so sweet. I had no idea she had lost her mother to a heart disease. Her mother had type 2 diabetes and later developed heart disease. So she's been spreading the word about how you have to manage those risks. And we sat down with a doctor who was talking about, you know, just make little changes. So we had an appointment for Declan on the other side of the river. And I thought, you know what? Steve doesn't have to drive me to work. I can take the 6-block walk and just do it that way. So it's just those little things along the way in your day that you have to remember to do to take care of yourself. By the way, Andre and I will be here till 11 o'clock. Then the night side takes over. I'm not sure. Tom, when you get a chance, let me know if you happen to. Dane Neal will be here the night side tonight from 11 to 1 a.m. into Nick D's show. So, by the way, go to WGNradio.com. You can find out about all the shows. I know sometimes people are kind of going from their cars to their homes. So don't forget, you can keep listening to us on WGN Radio's app. You can, you know, with your smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. You can follow the show at Patty V Show on Facebook, Andrea on Twitter and Facebook as well, Andrea Darlis and Instagram. And we'd love to hear from you. And if you're follow WGN Radio on Facebook, you also get to find out about all the live appearances we might be having. Like, what's the first Roel's coming up? So you'd want to find out about that appearance, how you can join in. And we have did you hear today on the conference call that we're doing It's a Wonderful Life again?
I heard that, yes.
So I believe that's on December 14th. So we'll be doing our live radio theater broadcast of It's a Wonderful Life.
Now, I know this is always a thing every year, and we always get told, because you and I are always like background girl one.
We're like chorus.
We're chorus. We never get a good part. But then I'm always told, you know, the line, there's no small parts, only small actors, right? But Bill Leff, I have to say, did a great job in It's a Wonderful Life. So I don't know if he'll be, you know, repeating that role or if it will be someone else.
I don't know. I know that he's punching it up. He's not taking wild liberties with the script, but he is doing some adjustments for it.
Okay.
We will be staying in the season of it. We won't be, like, updating it for modern times or anything like that.
Okay, that's good.
Well, do you remember what Pete McMurray would always, like, try to, like, throw things in that were topical, which was funny?
It was funny, but didn't stick with the...
But nobody else was doing it. It's weird when you have, like, one person sort of...
Right.
Which way do you go? Does everybody sort of take liberty? I don't know.
I know.
We'll tune in and find out.
I guess, right?
Our interpretation of it. So while I was walking over here today, Andrea, I realized I'm not prepared for the cold weather as other people seem to be.
Oh, I know.
I'm still in, like, I don't know what it's going to be like. I'll ask my husband in the morning, is it cold out? He's like, yes.
Yes.
And I'm like, all right, I guess winter coat. I don't have a hat. I have one glove. I've lost two scarves already this season.
No.
Yeah, I'm a mess.
I always buy, well, actually this year I bought new gloves. Mm-hmm. I went to Costco and they have great gloves because they have the kind where you can use your phone. So there's a little plastic part for your finger. That's fine. So I got gray, black, and then kind of a...
Oh, you bought several pairs.
I did, because it never fails. I'll always lose one the set within a week of buying it.
Exactly. Well, that's how I am too. And what I need are like those kids clips.
Yeah. Where they clip on your wrist.
Or like the one string that goes, did you ever have that where it had a string that ran through the sleeves?
I've seen those, but I never had one of those. Did you?
Yes, of course I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's what I think I need this year, is because I need to be better prepared for this weather. But with that being said, I saw this girl walking down Michigan Avenue. She was wearing a really short skirt. It was super cold out.
Yeah.
And she was wearing like winter socks all the way up past her knees, but then she still had like 4 inches of bare skin.
Yeah.
And I'm such a mom now. I'm like, who let you out of the house like that?
You need some tights.
You need to put something warm on.
Yeah.
You need some get there and be warm in the meantime.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of stuff. But you were asking me, and I told you I wouldn't tell you until we were on the air.
Yes.
You were asking what we keep the temperature in our house.
Yes. What do you keep your thermostat on?
If it was left up to me, it would be between 72 and 74.
Okay.
And we seem to be having some heating issues. My husband keeps accusing me of changing the thermostat, and I don't touch it.
And what is he? What would he ideally love it on?
I think he would like it on 68.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, okay. So in your house,
so in my house, so let's just say if I had my way, I would keep it probably around 70, 72 ish.
Okay. So somewhere in my range,
we keep it about 64 to 66.
Oh gosh.
I know. Got to save on the heating bill.
I was going to ask. Yes. So is that a saving measure?
And yeah. Because do you remember? I think it was 2 years ago when they just spiked. I mean, it just, you could barely keep it on, and then they just spiked. People were getting these home heating bills for like, you know, $200 and $300 and $400 just to heat, you know, either a one bedroom or a two bedroom.
Mm-hmm. What's the most expensive heating bill you've ever had?
Probably around two.
I lived in an apartment, this massive new apartment, my husband and I. It was new to us.
Yeah.
We had moved from a tiny six, maybe 700 square foot apartment to about a 1500 square foot apartment.
Okay.
And I couldn't tell you what our heating bills had been in the smaller place. But when we moved into that new apartment, Andrea, the heating bill was over $450.
No.
I was so happy to move out of that place.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were on the top floor. I don't know if it was a problem with the gas heat or whatever it was.
Yeah, because you would think that heat rises. You would keep it on a lower number.
I feel like we were heating the whole building for everybody.
I bet you probably were. Oh my God, when I first moved to the city, this was my second apartment. It was in Wrigleyville. And the landlord, we signed the lease and we paid for all, we had to pay for ComEd and not people. So the landlord, and it was, you know, my unit. Then there was, it was my unit, another unit, and the landlord's. We got a bill, I'm not kidding you, from People's Energy. So I stayed in that apartment about 2 years. After 2 years, we got a $3,000 bill from People's Energy. And there was a former
cumulative?
Yeah.
Oh,
because
God.
The landlord had not paid the bill. So, and
they
were
responsible.
Yeah. So we were responsible, and they had a divorce. They skipped town, and it was in his name. So I had to call People's Energy. Thankfully, Rod Sierra was one of our reporters here at WGN for many, many, many years. He left WGN, took a big job at People's, and I called him. I said, Rod, we have a $3,000 bill. And he said, we better pay the bill. I said, no. And I explained the whole thing to him. He said, oh yeah, that falls under the guise of the landlord. But trying to reverse that took months and months and months, just the, you know, the minutiae that you had to go through.
And was that something that was held against you on your credit report for a while?
No, okay. No. It's a great question, though. But isn't it awful?
That's terrible.
To open up a bill and find out that the landlord hadn't paid and you were getting it.
Yeah, that's a little shocking.
Yeah.
That'll stop you.
Right. That's why I keep it on 64. No.
64, I think, is too low.
It's a little cold, yeah. That's, I so wear do a lot you of sweatshirts.
That's what I was going to ask, like wool socks.
And yep.
Do you wake up just like in a tight... I couldn't wake up like that.
I have a sheet, a blanket, a bedspread, and then sometimes I put the Sherpa on top of that.
Do you know what you should try?
What? Oh.
A heated blanket.
You told me that. Yes. You told me that last week.
Life changing.
That's what I need to get.
Let's go shop up for that on Amazon.
Absolutely.
Right now. Or whatever website of a company that maybe likes us. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darla, 720 WGN. When we come back, we are going to find out about a new streaming service called Industry. Find out more in a moment. So much of the entertainment that we enjoy these days is the kind of thing that you can either pay for through your satellite or maybe through streaming, but it's all pretty passive. And there's a new streaming service that is looking to change that. We are thrilled to welcome into the studio Mary Landaverde, who is the CEO of Industry TV. And we want to thank you so much for joining us, Mary. And I'm curious about this because there's so many different streaming services that people are trying to understand. Do I want this? Do I want that? But what I read is that you have found a way to help people who maybe have an idea creatively, take it from being heard like on, you know, some other streaming thing, maybe trying to get it out online, and take them to the next step, whether it's filmmaking or music. What a great idea. Tell us how this all came about.
Yeah, so thanks. We recognize that there's this community of creators and emerging artists in TV, film, and music that's not being served. So when you've got streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon that's got all the big tentpole content, Disney, Warner Brothers, all these big studios, but you've got hundreds and thousands of content creators that are real and small production studios and emerging artists that will never get to see their art and their creative work. They'll create films, they'll do the film festival route, but we never see them in theaters. They don't get distribution. So Industry really is a platform and a destination that serves them and allows them to have distribution and be able to bring their work to us and monetize and make money on their product. And we have a unique ability to also get them to collaborate with one another. So filmmakers can tap into our emerging artists to score their films, and emerging music artists can get their music on these emerging films and episodic digital series. So we foster and champion these emerging artists that don't really get a distribution, make mm-hmm. money, and get to showcase their work and their art and have a digital streaming platform that markets and puts PR behind them.
It's such an awesome, an awesome venture. And, you know, I'm so proud as a woman that you were able to do this. How hard was it to go from concept, you know, writing everything down, what you wanted to do, to actually executing it and going through all these steps to where you are today?
It was 3 years in the making. And I've got a background in brand strategy, marketing, and licensing. I've been doing that for 20 years. And what I learned is, as we shifted to digital and working with artists in this community, I knew what the need was, and we also knew that they're trying to reach an audience that's looking for original content and new music and this whole tastemaker lifestyle. So building the technology was the difficult part, but I surrounded my business with really great people and a great chief technology officer and a tech partner to build this vision and bring it to life.
And I love that it's the kind of thing that you saw a need, right? Because mm-hmm. a lot of the networks are still trying to figure out how to catch up to the streaming services. And this is a way to sort of go, hey, this is a here, not only are we tapping into what people are already enjoying, but we're also giving them some ability to have input. How can viewers have input with the content that they're enjoying?
We are an interactive streaming platform. Mm-hmm. So for the first time ever, we want to take viewers' submissions. So we'll take submissions of content. Feel free to submit your pilots and your films. And then our members of industry can vote. They actually have a voice. You know, with all due respect to the bigger networks, they decide what you are going to watch. They decide what content they're going to bring in. And then they create their own original content. We say, hey, we've got a lot of talent out there, but we don't get to choose. Our audience gets to choose.
Right.
So they vote, they share, and the ones that get the most exposure and the most votes, we then extend a distribution deal for.
See, I think that sets you apart wholeheartedly, because there's these great shows like Sense8 or Gotham or whatever it is on the Netflix or Amazon or whatnot. But yeah, and then they start these campaigns, you know, to bring these series back, whereas here, the viewers and your partners are actually deciding and listening to each other, saying, yeah, this is working out. So it's highly interactive.
Yeah, it's interactive. And then on top of the content, you can, there's a shop watch feature. So if you're watching content, you can also engage with our brand partners who can put product placement on the content through these advertising. So if you are watching your favorite music video with your favorite artist, you can buy the t-shirt he's wearing right on the content.
Oh, I know. We've done that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Some of us have done that.
Yeah, Andrea's laughing because I came in. I you know, you live a certain way and you have a certain style, and then when you try something different, people are like, oh, so there were a pair of shoes that I loved in the series on TV, and I just hunted them down, and I have them now. They're just like...
There you go.
Yes.
But you watch it on television?
It was on Netflix.
It was The Haunting of Hill House.
So, but then you have to kind of figure it out.
Yep.
You got to Google it, or you don't know what brand. On our platform, it's all there. There's a little hotspot. You can click on it. You can put it in your shopping list, and then finish watching your episode or your series, and then go back and shop all the stuff that you liked later. So we've integrated all of that.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's a great idea.
That's
Thank
amazing.
You.
Well, and when you mentioned, you know, with product placement, then that also kind of makes everyone invested in what they're doing, right? Whether it's the look of it and how people can... Look, we all know that a lot of what we all do is driven by revenue and how you can sell advertising and things like that.
Yeah.
But if it's part of the storytelling, people always get mad. Oh, look, there's a, you know, Coke in the scene or whatever. But this is a way for even, you know, to... Like I said, find a new way to bring that to life for people rather than passively watching a commercial.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the idea is we bring the power back to the consumer. That hotspot's there if you want to click it or not.
Right.
The choice is yours. The content's yours. You have a voice. You get to decide whether you want to shop or not. And that's a different experience than, say, you know, a YouTube video where a whole bunch of pop-up ads come up at you, right? And you have to watch or you have to click in order to X out. In our platform, it's seamless. It's storytelling, there's product placement, but it's up to you as the viewer to be able to engage with it or not.
You took a dream and obviously made it a reality with all of your experience and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So what would your advice be to young women out there who want to do the same thing? Say, I want to be a CEO of a company and I want to make this happen.
You know what? In the media tech space, which is what industry is, there are very few women. So we are pushing the boundaries and raising the bar for females to get out there, and when you have a vision, I would just say stay very laser focused, stay true to your vision. Don't pay attention on that there's other, you know, bigger companies out there run by males. This is our year, and this is our time to shine. And there's so much opportunity now for women to go out there, realize their vision, and here's what I'm going to tell you, surround yourself with really great people that are smarter than you and build teams that's going to fulfill the mission even without you. So I think for women in general, we're nurturers.
Right.
Use that as, I think that's a blessing, and it's also our biggest value proposition as leaders of companies. We're nurturers by nature, and I think it really works to our benefit because you take that and you build teams around you, you will succeed. And, you know, again, industry's been in the making for 3 years, but we launched last year. We're making money, and in 2019, we're going to be launching our 2.0, and it's going to be a beautiful app. And so
that's awesome.
Let's find out some more. Do you want to stay for another segment? We'd love to talk to you. And before we go to the break, we're talking to Mary Linda Verde. If you have any questions about industry, the new streaming service that you have access to premier original programming and interactive technology, you can watch, connect, shop, and engage all on a single screen. Before we go to the break, there are some listeners, by the way, Andrea, who are sending in their temperatures as to where they keep the thermostat.
Am I still the lowest?
No, okay. but I don't know. I think there were a couple that were in that range. 68 degrees is glorious. You got a man up, girl. I'm a woman and I love it like that. So I'm not sure. I think that's for both of us because 68 is a little low for me.
Yeah.
815 says, I once had a ComEd bill one January that was $1,000. And we'll talk about blankets when we come back. It's a tease. Let's talk about your blankets. Right. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, 720 WGN. That's right. You better play some dance music, Tom, because those temperatures that Andrea just read out, you gotta stay warm somehow. We still have texts coming in from listeners. Hey, ladies, I keep my heat at 64 to 66 degrees.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But I live in a garden apartment with radiant heat, so the toasty warm floors always, and overnight it really warms up. Thank you, Carol. Aww, we love you too, by the way.
Thanks, Carol.
We've been talking about weighted blankets.
Yeah.
I mentioned heated blankets. Apparently, people don't like my idea.
No.
We have several texts coming in about weighted blankets. Now, we have our guest. We have Mary Linda Verde, who is the CEO of Industry TV. That's I-N-D-U. I-N-D-I-S-T-R-Y TV. So Distry, like distribution.
Yeah, Industry is independent story.
Okay.
It's a play on independent stories.
Oh.
Industry, I-N-D-I.
Indies.
Very Stry cool. TV.com. For more information. And Mary, do you make your home here or are you in Los Angeles or where?
Our headquarters is here in Chicago, but my teams are all over. We've got people, our head of content's on the East Coast. Our operations are in LA. So we're all over the place. We're a global company, yeah. So we don't need to be in one place.
Right. A lot of Skype meetings.
Yes.
A lot of Skype meetings. Your background includes Polaroid, Miss America, Atari. I mean, you've worked for some major corporations as well. And I'm sure that has helped kind of, you know, with the old adage, never burn a bridge. I mean, are you using a lot of your same contacts and people and with your previous job?
Yeah. I was head of brand strategy and marketing for Miss America Properties and Playboy Enterprises. That was actually here in Chicago for years before they moved to LA. And remember, I've been in the business for 20 years. So I basically, these were marketing managers that are now chief marketing officers. So we kind of grew up together and I have kept, you know, great relationships throughout my career and they've been able to help, you know, we still work together in some cases with content.
You bring up an interesting point. Andre was asking earlier about advice you would give to other young women and other women. I mean, you know, because
young. Thank you.
Sure. Well, young women, but I mean, for women in general, I think that you're also an inspiration to young women and women maybe who are in their careers trying to figure out what to do next or how to be a leader. So it is about surrounding yourself with people who are smarter than you, encouraging women to utilize their natural skills, whether it's nurture or finding ways to help others. But also what you just mentioned is keeping good relationships throughout your career, because whatever happens in a moment where you might want to explode or go off on somebody can really burn you later on down the road, can't
No, absolutely. And I think as women, we're just by default under the microscope a lot by other companies, how we react, how we manage our business, our people. And so, you know, I would say that we have both an opportunity, but also a challenge. And so you have to kind of really be true to yourself and be authentic and can step up and, you know, lean in and not be afraid. But also, because we're under a microscope, I think that we also have, and I always say it's an opportunity and a blessing, but a responsibility almost to, for all women to kind of be a role model for women, And so that's, I think it's a really great chance to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know that you have an event tomorrow. Again, this is industrytv.com, IndiStrytv.com. And I know that you are partnering with Virgin Hotels. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about that relationship, because they're great.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is so much fun. At the core and heart of who we are as a company and as a brand is, you know, we want to use entertainment for good. We champion emerging artists and the creatives, but we also champion, you know, a lot of different causes and a lot of different social good. And so about a year ago, we forged a partnership with Virgin Hotels here in Chicago. And what an amazing global brand that has stood, you know, Richard Branson, icon. He started out as an entertainment company, music company, but look how he's expanded the brand. But there were so many synergies between Virgin being philanthropic and entertainment, and he's expanded into other businesses. So a year ago, we sat down and we said, look, you know, we're a streaming platform. We do these events. We would love to collaborate on activations at the hotel. You guys are doing music and all these fun things at the at your property. You know, let's marry what we're doing, curate content, stream it on industry, and it's exclusive for our users as well as yours. And it was a really fun year, and now we're expanding into 2019 as they open other properties. Thursday, on the 15th, we do have an event, and we're able to do music concerts, film screenings, talks. And this Thursday one, Room 72 is a very special one, because it's an annual series that Virgin, that Richard Branson actually started with Virgin several years ago, and we have, you know, a really great opportunity to come in and produce it for them.
I think that's awesome, too, because, as you said, industry really is a place to go, because where else would you go to either display your talent or say, hey, notice me, you know, I have this raw talent, whether it's acting, singing, whatnot, unless we were saying during the break, unless you go on, say, American Idol or something.
Right.
But this is a great place to display the content.
Yeah.
When you mentioned curating, you know, material and also encouraging artists to, you know, collaborate with each other, is it a pitch process as well, or is it more about kind of coordinating and helping people come into contact with
each
other?
You would be so shocked that there are so many of them wanting to collaborate with each other. There's such a need. They're all hungry to get all of their, you know, their music out there, their films out there, and work with others. Creatives are very, you know, highly collaborative people. So, you know, networking, connecting them, and we just become a bridge for them is like, it's amazing. We don't have to pitch it to them. It's like, what, you're here for us, and you're championing us, and we can come to you, and we can submit our content. Oh, and you mean I can put my music on a film? And yes, filmmaker, cool. Meet emerging artist.
Right.
We don't take any, there's no money's exchange. We don't take a percentage of it. They collaborate and it's a win-win for everyone.
It sounds like it.
That yeah. is, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah.
And this event you have on Thursday night, which is Room 72, the Impact Generation, Millennial Entrepreneurs Changing the World for Good. It's going to be from 5:30 to 8:30 at the Virgin Hotel right here on Wabash. Is that right? I just was there the other day.
Yes, yeah, at Virgin Hotels inside the Manor Room. So we're really excited because, again, this was Richard Branson's event and Room 72. They do this every year and they have a different theme. And this particular year, it's about, like it says, millennials and social entrepreneurs that are using business for social good.
So there's Max LaManna, who's a celebrity chef from Eating with Max, Stephen Garten, who's the founder and CEO of Charity Charge, Ryan Mundy, who's a former NFL player and founder of Swizzle from Chicago, Adam Force, co-founder Change Creator, and I'm saving the last because a lot of our listeners know and are familiar with Todd Belcour, who's been a regular on my show since the budget impasse in Springfield. Todd Belcour is one of the hardest working individuals. I'm sure all these individuals are as well. I'm so thrilled to see that he's collaborating with you guys on this project on Thursday.
Oh yeah, we are so excited. And I met him for the first time a couple months ago when he was doing his Change Festival here in Chicago.
Right.
Amazing.
Did you see the fashion show?
I couldn't because we were doing our event at Virgin. We were doing another event at Virgin, so we missed it. But you're right.
Dueling fashion shows. Yes. Yeah, dueling events. Yeah.
And he is this young, dynamic, smart individual. And when we had the opportunity, when Virgin approached us and said, do you guys want to produce the Room 72? Todd was the first one on my list, you know. And I said, Todd, you have to do this event. And he's going to be a phenomenal speaker. You've met him and you know. Yeah.
Well, and Andre, he's the kind of guy that will do whatever it takes to get work done. And and it's about having a positive impact on society. And he's an inspiration, young and old, to everybody. Yeah,
that's all you can ask for.
So if he's the kind of guest that you're having on this panel, I can only assume that the rest are of that caliber. So we're so thrilled. How can people learn more about Industry TV?
They can check out our website, our corporate website, which is industrymedia.com, to learn more about the company and who we are and even see the team. Uh-huh. And that's INDISTRYMEDIA. Or you can just go to Industry TV on our socials, on Instagram. Our handle is Industry TV as well as Facebook.
And if they want to stream it, is that like if I have a Roku, am I able to add it as a streaming service?
Available on Apple iOS, your Apple phone, Google Android, and the web.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's excellent. Yeah.
I've been searching for it. I'm like, I don't see it here.
I know. It's like, give me your phone.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And we look forward to having you back. Now that we know you're headquartered here, we're going to be bothering you.
Yeah.
We got stuff.
And for the launch.
We got ideas.
For the 2019 launch of 2.0 as well.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. We're so excited. That's launching, hopefully, cross our fingers, January 2019. Whole brand new look and feel and design and better interactivity.
I think our walking neighborhoods is more for Mary. I mean, we could like travel to other cities around the world.
right.
And go checking out the neighborhoods with Andrea and Patty. I'm just
That'd
saying.
Be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Mary. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great night. Stay warm, because we're going to talk more about that, of course. We have our friends from JDRF coming in to talk about how they have partnered with Buena Beef to help raise funds and awareness. Of course, an organization that's near and dear to our hearts here at WGN Radio. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, 720 WGN. I think listeners of WGN Radio know our close and very strong connection with JDRF. Of course, JDRF focuses on curing type 1 diabetes, also pursuing new treatments to keep people with type 1 diabetes healthy until the day comes for a cure. And we are so thrilled to welcome in the studio Executive Director for JDRF, Mimi Crabtree. And Andrea, I know you and I have done events for JDRF.
Oh, yeah.
It's always some of our favorite things to do. Mm-hmm. And you have partnered with somebody else that we love, which is Bona Beef.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit, first of all, Mimi, about what this year has been like for JDRF. Where are we today?
Well, it's always a struggle because this disease is just growing exponentially, and so we're taking a look at that, and we're trying to fund as much research as we can. We're the largest funder of diabetes research. So for us right now, it's our busy season. First of all, November is Diabetes Awareness Month, and we just came off our walks. You know, we have 7 walks, and we're going right into gala season. So we're busy.
Ah, it's a gala. I just got a voice in my ear, by the way. It's Bona Beef. Bona Beef. Please say Bona Beef.
Bona Beef.
Thank you.
Aren't they fabulous?
Yes. And yes. The walks are always so hugely successful. That was one of the first walks that I really got involved with when I came to WGN because, of course, of Ron Sano.
Absolutely.
And I will never, ever forget. He would go to, back then there were 4 walk sites, you know, the lake, the north suburbs, western, and then south as well, mm-hmm. by Moran Valley. And he would go to every location, and even at the end, he would make it to at least 2 or 3 and sign autographs and take pictures with everybody who wanted one.
That's my challenge every year, is to beat Ron Santo's numbers and getting out there.
Because
we have 7 walks now, so it's a little challenging. But yeah.
And they're all over the Chicagoland location, so everyone's near one. And even farther south, like in central Illinois.
In Merrillville, Indiana.
That's such a testament, though. That is great. I know it's more work for you, but to go from 2 to 4 to now 7 sites, that has to be huge for the
well,
foundation.
As I said, the disease is growing, and we're trying to touch as many people as we can. And he was such a champion because he really started talking about it. I mean, people don't understand the disease, the implications, how hard it is every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he really brought it home to people.
Yeah.
And for those, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said sure, he absolutely did.
Yeah, for those who are not perhaps familiar, despite all the conversations that we have, it's Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, is JDRF. And you mentioned that people don't quite understand the disease and you know how it impacts a family. Because all of a sudden they go from thinking their life is one way and now they're constantly in emergency mode.
Exactly. I mean, you can have a wonderful life, but you really have to manage it nonstop.
Yes.
You never get a break from it. There is no cure. So every day you're managing your carbs, your insulin, and any slight misstep and you can be in trouble. So I think that's the critical thing. And because you're walking around looking, we call it an invisible disease, people don't understand what it's like behind the scenes. And people confuse it with type 2 diabetes, and it's a very different disease.
I'm looking up at the clock because can you see what time Bona Beef's closed? Because I didn't realize today was the day you partnered with them
today
to raise funds. So I want people who are in their cars right now, if you're driving by a Bona Beef,
stop, pull over.
Yes.
And meet the families, because we have families out at all of the locations talking to people, trying to help them understand what's going on, but also to support Bona because they are doing amazing things this month. So they're doing today, they're doing 20% of their catering sales will go to JDRF this month. They're also supporting Giving Tuesday and doing a donation. And they, you know, they feed us on our walks. They do the catering. They help us with our school programs. They're an amazing organization.
Didn't I read somewhere they raised more than $100,000 already?
Yes, absolutely.
So far for your fundraising events and whatnot?
Yes. Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Right. And it's the passion. I mean, I think that's one of the things I love about JDRF is our volunteers care deeply. They'll do anything to help find a cure.
And when you find a partner like Bona Beef, I mean, that must be such a, you know, because they show up, right? They're at the walks. They're a presence. They help feed everybody. And then they also are there throughout the year for events like this. That must be so crucial in the work that you do at JDRF.
We're so dependent on our volunteers. You know, we're an organization that was started by volunteers 40 years ago, and we're still living with that philosophy, is asking people to just help in any way that they can. We have a group of youth ambassadors who come out and talk. We had one tonight at our board meeting. Yeah, people who live with this know that they've got to help.
How's everything coming? I know every year it gets better, and I know we're getting closer and closer to a cure, fingers crossed, someday, very, very soon, sooner rather than later. How is everything as far as research progressing?
Well, if you want to know the truth, we really are in a good place in terms of research development. I think the data, technology, and so forth is really making progress. So we're funding 150 research projects now. We've got 70 clinical trials. So there's a lot of interesting things on the horizon, but again, it's all about finding the cure, and that's what we're working towards.
And managing too for families who now have a new set of circumstances, you know, and you mentioned that you have an ambassador. So it is important to have somebody who can say, hey, I'm doing this, you can too.
Right. We have mentors, too. We have adult mentors to help people. We have a lot of resource educational materials because somebody's got to walk along with these families and help them. And that's what we want to do.
And that's the thing. And how can people get involved? You mentioned that so much of this is based on volunteering. How can people participate, whether it's donating their time or their resources?
Give us a call.
Yeah.
That's really it. I mean, or if you know somebody that's involved in the organization, reach out to them. But we are looking for volunteers for our galas, for our walks. Type One Nation is an all-day summit. We have February 23rd at McCormick Place. We'll have 1,000 people there. So we always need volunteers to help with that as well. Or just come and listen and learn.
Yeah.
Because like you said, everything is changing.
Oh, it does.
Stay up with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. My friend has been battling diabetes her whole life, one of my college friends. And when we all first met, you know, she was checking her blood sugar with the needle. And now it's just quick little prick with the finger.
Right.
But not every day, not, you know, 3 times a day. You know, so now it's just gotten so much better as
well. Well, the device is allowing you to do that, right?
Yeah.
And also the monitoring. I mean, the wonderful thing I say is now it's on the iPhone.
Right.
So parents can let their kids go out and play and have a great life, and they can be monitoring it.
Yep.
We are talking to Mimi Crabtree. She's the executive director for JDRF Illinois. And you can go to jdrf.org for more information. And also, stop by at Bona Beef and pick up some food because they'll be donating 20% of sales generated by supporters in all of their stores to JDRF. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play.
I have to wonder if there is a better Christmas song to discuss. The Zoo Lights. Lincoln Park Zoo is announcing their 24th annual Zoo Lights events and activities. That's coming up, of course. The biggest event is when they start, because it's returning on November 23rd. Andrea, have you, I'm guessing you and I have enjoyed the Zoo Lights.
Oh, I love the Zoo Lights, the ice sculptures and the dancing Christmas trees.
That's such good stuff.
My favorite.
And that's why we're thrilled to welcome with us, we have the director of events, Josh Rupp from Lincoln Park Zoo. Hey, Josh, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you? I'm very impressed that you guys know so much about the zoo.
I've been members since my boys were. My boys are 13 and 15 years old. I'm guessing Andrea and I have been going to Lincoln Park Zoo since our field trip days in grade school.
But no matter how much you go there, you still can get turned around. For you guys to know your left versus right, to how to get to the
I know.
Front,
it's funny because I was like, no, Patty, it's on the right. She's like, no, wait. What side do you enter from?
It's very impressive. Yep. I'm very impressed.
We know our zoo.
Yes, I know that zoo.
Awesome.
And I used to be a lifeguard right over on the other side at North Avenue Beach, and so we would do a lot of our runs through the zoo. I've known it in so many different ways. I mean, when you guys changed the penguins' house, it was hard, but what you've done with it since is wonderful. All the way over by the Africa House, it's great over there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's beautiful. They've done a really good job with revamping a lot of the exhibits, and actually that's one of the reasons why we do so many events at the zoo is we are basically fundraising to keep the zoo open and free 365 days a year and keep building world-class institution and building these amazing exhibits to showcase all the amazing animals.
I do have questions about the lion house, the cat house. I didn't know about the changes. So the lions are still there outside, right? As far as where people
can
see
them? Lions are still there, yeah. And I don't know too much about it. It's part of the Pride of Chicago campaign that they're doing. We're basically going around and revamping a lot of the houses, a lot of historic houses, and the Lion House happens to be one of the most historic houses that we have on ground. So, yeah, there are plans in the works to help revamp a lot of that. And our animal care staff is working very closely with the architecture firms to make sure that they're best suited for the animals, but also, you know, well-suited for guests of all ages to learn and be educated.
You know what I love about the Zoo Lights is that, and I think that's awesome what you guys are doing with the Lion House too, but I think the Zoo Lights, it's awesome because it could be, you know, as young as kids in strollers to seniors. I mean, it's any age. We go every year, and we used to do a cousin's trolley night. You know, we'd hit different restaurants and bars and whatnot, and we'd always have to stop at the zoo. So all my cousins, I have 14 first cousins, Josh, and we would all go and we'd listen to the Christmas trees and watch the ice sculpture, and we'd always take our pictures at the Zoo Lights. So I think it's just any age, and don't you see generation after generation coming back year after year, kind of like me and Patty, only not that many generations.
It is actually so interesting. So I've been the director, I've been working at the zoo for about 7 years, and I've been helping to oversee Zoo Lights for that entire time, and it is very interesting because Through Lights has been going on for 24 years, almost 25 years next year, and so many thousands. I mean, when we started this thing 24 years ago, it was a couple thousand people came through, and we did it, I think, for two weekends. You know, now we're 35 days. We start, like you guys said, the opening day is November 23rd, and we go select nights through January 6th. And it's 35 days, and it's so interesting year after year. The things that people remember, you know, it could be the waving gingerbread man, or like you guys mentioned, the ice carvers, or visiting Santa. You know, I feel like there's a lot of places that you can visit Santa at throughout the city. But like, I feel like ours is very convenient, and we do a really good job of changing up the decor and making it fresh every year and making sure people have a really good experience when they come.
It is one of my favorite. I'm actually just pulling up some of my pictures, Andrea, where you can see, like, I have all my, because, you know, you can go through your photo album and, like, put Linkin Park Zoo, and it'll pull up all their shots. I mean, you know, where they have the, what's the cafe, like, the lagoon. And the way that's lit up, and then you can go inside and have hot chocolate.
Which picture are you looking at? Are you looking at
my own?
the Loch Ness Monster, though?
This one had, this is a couple years ago, this had palm trees. Do you remember that from a couple years ago?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, the palm trees,
Yep, so I, what is there, are there some, what's some of the new things we should look for this year? What elements are you loving?
We have a giant arch that is spanning across of our main mall. It's about 40 feet across that you can walk under. It's really beautifully lit. Mm-hmm. And then on either side of it, flanking either side, we have these giant peacock feathers that come out into the main walkway. So you're walking under that. There's a solar system inspired display that's in our children's zoo near the otters that you guys were talking about earlier. Our South Lawn, which is where our musical light show is, we shamelessly call it the Winter Wonderland. That's where we have several different full songs. That there's an animated light display that happens, and we change that up every year. This year, we took a nod from our friends at the Morton Arboretum, and we're highlighting a lot of the natural landscapes around the South Lawn, which is going to be really interesting. It's going to be more modern. Last year, we did a take on Alice in Wonderland. So this year, it'll be a little bit more modern. But it'll still be very fun and very different. Still some of a lot of the favorites that people have. We still have over 200 lit 2D displays. We have a lot of 3D displays. The ice carvers are back, as I mentioned. This year, we're bringing carolers. So about 10 years ago, we used to have...
That's awesome.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, we used to have carolers that walked around the zoo, and it just has gotten too cold. So, but this year, we found a brave group of five men and women who are excited to dress up in their period wear and travel the zoo and sing to all the people.
Do you have a, let me ask you this, Josh, do you have a favorite song that comes up with those coordinated lights over by there?
I'm a sucker. See, I love like old school, like the,
Nat
Elvis,
King Cole. I'm sorry, Elvis, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say Mannheim Steamroller.
I guess Nat King Cole is a little bit more old school, but I like Elvis's Blue Christmas, even though it's kind of depressing, but it's still great. A great
Yeah, I like
Christmas
that too.
Song.
Yep.
And the Mannheim Steamroller.
I'm a Beatles fan, and I'm always a Beatles fan, so I love the old Paul McCartney's. But the trick with South Lawn is you need a good beat, because you want the lights to flash and you want everything to be coordinated and really exciting and engaging as people are watching it. So a lot of those nice songs like Nat King Cole or Elvis, they're beautiful songs, but they don't have enough of a beat to engage with the light. So it's very tricky to pick songs that differ away from my favorites.
I think Andrea is always one of the song that you said. What does Manhattan Steamroller play? They do bump ba da na bump ba da na. That
do 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 do. And I can see all the crisp right, and they all light up. Do 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 do.
Yeah, right. No, it's a fun event, and we have to thank our sponsors, Invesco QQQ and ComEd. They help us out. They've been sponsors for a while now, so they've helped grow our event considerably year over year. And last year we had about 600,000 people come through in the 35 days, and it is kind of what you guys were talking about a little bit, is that we see so many ages and people, traditions coming through, that it's one of the reasons why we've started creating these special event nights. So starting on the 27th of November, we have a holiday market, which is all ages, except that it's limited capacity. So if you're actually smart about coming to Zoo Lights and you love it so much, you should come on these special event nights. It's a ticketed, so there's a ticket price, except the good thing is that it's limited capacity. So you can experience Zoo Lights in all of its glory but you don't have to be surrounded by 30,000 people.
It does get crowded, but and sometimes that can also be very festive as well. And when you mentioned ticketed, I don't think we had a chance. I have a, by the way, I want to mention this, and one of the greatest things about coming is seeing the faces on my beautiful boys. And Declan, who has a neurological disorder, and it's similar to autism, there's always those lighted tunnels that just make him giggle and smile in ways that we don't see the rest
that's
of the year.
Awesome.
So
I love that.
That's the kind of magic you guys keep going for families year after year. But tell us a little about the light maze. I know it's 30,000 light bulbs.
Yeah, the light maze. So the light maze last year was the first time we kind of conceptualized that idea. And if you guys remember, we used to have ice skating at the farm in the zoo.
Oh, yeah.
And that we did that for about 3 years. The trick is that ice skating, to actually build up an ice skating infrastructure, it's just really, really expensive. And we had it at the farm, and it did well. But truthfully, there's probably other places in the city that do ice skating a lot more than Lincoln Park Zoo, a lot better than Lincoln Park Zoo. So we started trying to think of, well, what could we do different and more unique? And we thought of this light maze idea. There was a place in Canada that did it, and we thought, oh, that's really, really interesting. So we kind of just thought of an idea, started putting it together, and built it all out last year, and it really worked really, really well. It takes about 3 to 5 minutes to get through if you're going through it slow. But it's so interesting because, like you mentioned, it's 30,000 lights. And they're bright, bright LED lights. They're not your average Christmas lights. They're bright LED lights, and there's blues and purples and greens. So as you're running and traversing through the different labyrinths of paths, you get lost and you hit a corner and then you turn around. But it's just so much fun. To run through this display of lights. It's honestly like nothing else in the city. Especially when you hear South Lawn, because the light maze actually sits across from the South Lawn, the Winter Wonderland. So you're running through this maze of lights in tune with all this music and the light show that's happening just over, the pond from the flamingos. So it's very interesting. It's very fun. This is our second year doing it, and that event is sponsored by Invesco QQQ, too. So they helped us with that, too.
It's so much fun. Patty and I are showing each other our pictures.
from Lincoln
Park Zoo, from the zoo lights.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to show it in pictures, right? I've been wanting so badly to do a photo class or something at Zoo Lights, because it's so hard to take pictures of the lights. It's something that you have to experience in person to actually get the full effect. Because a video or a photo or me just telling you about it, it's not gonna do it justice. And you know what the cool thing is that it's free. For 24 years, Zoo Lights has been free and will continue to be free for as long as I'm around. So it's just a very unique tradition in the heart of Chicago that's a free experience for everyone.
It's fun to watch the kids when they're super little. I'm looking at my god kids now and then through the years. Yeah. And they still want to go, which is good.
Well, I want to make sure everyone knows about all the events you have coming up. I need to hold you for another segment, Josh, because there's a lot of stuff coming up, including Breakfast with Santa, the Zoo Year's Eve that we want to make sure people know about, the Adults Night Out holidays, and of course, on Giving Tuesday. Now, let's talk about that before the break real quick. On Giving Tuesday, November 27th, there's a holiday market where you guys can browse for treasures from local artisans and crafters. And Josh will tell us more about that when we come back on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, 720 WGN.
Santa's got a little friend, his name is Dominic, the cutest little donkey you'll never see.
Danny Kaye!
When Santa visits his paisans with Dominic.
How many songs of animals do we have to talk about the Lincoln Park Zoo lights coming up, Tom Hush?
I'm guessing infinite.
Infinite number of songs. We're talking to Josh Rupp. He is the director of events for Lincoln Park Zoo, and it's the 24th annual Zoo Lights events and activities. And you guys have a lot planned for the season. What are some of the highlights you want to let people know about, Josh?
Yeah, so we have a holiday market, which features over 60 different local vendors on November 27th, Giving Tuesday. Tickets are on sale, but they're moving fast. We have, that's all ages. And then that next Thursday, the 30th, we have Adults Night Out. That's 18 and older. I'm sorry, November 29th. That's Adults Night Out. We have different chats and animal enrichment activities, and keepers are out talking to the guests. We have music and just a good, fun time for people to come out. That next week, December 6th, is Brew Lights. It features over 20 different beers from Lakeshore Beverage. It's a beer tasting experience under the glow of Zoo Lights. Like you mentioned, Breakfast with Santa is December 16th, which is a brand new event for us this year. It's a brunch at our historic Cafe Brower on the south side of the zoo with the jolly old man sitting in his chair, and he'll talk to everyone during the brunch. And then the other new event that we have this year, which is really exciting, it's something that we've been trying to do for several years now, but it's Zoo Year's Eve. So it's going to be a New Year celebration like no other in the city. It'll be all under the glow of zoo lights from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. and bar set up and music set up. All the lights are going to be on. The animals will be out, and keepers will be there to talk to guests during the, you know, to ring in the new year.
From 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., Andrea, people can hang out at Lincoln Park Zoo on New Year's
Love
Eve.
Love it. Yes.
There's something about being at the zoo till 1 a.m. that just feels right and wrong.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
Yeah, a little of both.
Yes.
But they're exciting. You know, you can find out more information at lpzoo.org, and we have a lot going on, and it's exciting. It's just it's a fun time for the zoo, but it's just like Chicago. Chicago gets so deep into the holiday spirit, and it makes us all happy. It makes us end the year with a smile on our face.
That's true.
Now, one of the New Year's resolutions people might be making is staying in better shape, and you've got Glow Flow Yoga at the Regenstein Small Mammal Reptile House. Now, is that over by... I'm trying to figure out what, like, I know that the area is, like, the most open. It's, like, near the big snakes area, even though they call it small reptiles. There's some pretty sizable snakes.
Yeah, no, it's Glow Flow Yoga is a brand new event for us, too. It's in the Small Mammal House. It's in the gallery, so it's just around where the snakes are. Yep. There's some spiders out there, but it's going to be interesting because all the zoo lights decor will be up. We'll obviously shut the lights down low. We're going to give out like glowing bracelets, glowing necklaces to everybody as they come in. And then we limited the capacity for that. So I think 30 to 40 people will be allowed in. And it's going to be a fun one. We do a program during the summer called Fitness at a Zoo, which features yoga and Zumba and Pilates and meditation. So this is kind of a special event for fitness at the zoo. And then actually following that, speaking of the new year, we're doing a Pilates with the primates on Super Bowl Sunday.
It's fun.
Which is going to be interesting, you know? So it's like getting in shape for the new year, and then it's getting in shape for Super Bowl Sunday.
That's right. That's awesome. That's too funny. We have one of our regular listeners, Trucker Jamie, says the zoo lights are a great way to spend an evening. I've been to Cincinnati, Toledo, Columbus, Ohio, all unique. And I love Columbus has the ice skating. I agree with you though, because when you go to Lincoln Park Zoo, there are certain things that you have in mind, and I think that especially I don't remember seeing it. Was it up by the farm? You said the ice skating last year.
Yeah, it was down south by the farm. So we basically closed off the crop garden. It was a 40 by 80 ice skating ring, which isn't huge.
Right.
So I think that's the other trick of it. It's more of a family focus. Just come and skate around a little bit. But again, there's so many other places in Chicago that does ice skating so much better than we do. So there's no reason for us to compete against that.
It's more about strolling.
Yes.
Than gliding.
Yes.
you know? Exactly.
And it's such a different way to see a zoo that maybe you're familiar with it and you'll find something new every single time. I before we go, Josh, I want to make sure, is there anything we're leaving on the table that people should know about? Because there's always, like, I know that you guys have spots where kids can do some crafts. Have you moved that or is it still available? Because that used to be in the cat house.
So we'll have crafts on members' night only. We actually encourage people to spend their time walking around the zoo, staying outside. The buildings will be open. Like I said, there's keeper chats, and we have education stations this year. So we're actually investing more in having our educators and our keepers out on the public space, interacting with guests, so that they can have a more fulfilling experience. So, you know, our point as doing events at the zoo is, one, to make sure that the zoo stays open and free 365 days a year, but also walk away with something, right? So we want you to come to Zoo Lights to experience the lights, experience the joy of the season, but we want you to walk away with knowing about these amazing animals and the conservation stories that we do and all the hard work that the keepers do, not just in the city of Chicago, but across the world, to take care of these animals and make sure people know, you know, these are things that we should care and learn and educate ourselves about. So, you know, that's the biggest thing from us, our side that we do. We do beer festivals and wine festivals and movies and all kinds of stuff, and we want you to have a good time at the zoo, but learn something. And we encourage you, like I mentioned, to come to lpzoo.org and learn all about all of the events that we do and learn all about our educators and our keeper staff and the things that, you know, make the zoo who we are.
I want to thank you so much for all of that, Josh.
Yeah, Josh.
No, for sure.
And thank we'll, you guys we'll so much see you at the zoo. Me. Yeah, we'll see you under the
yeah.
light.
Yeah, we'll see, we'll send you our pictures, Josh. We'll bombard you with all of our pictures this year.
Oh no, Dad, I've got like 100 from all the
and you know
photos
what?
I've taken.
And 1 year I bought it, and they still and you guys still send me the emails, which is great. Like, hey, do you want your picture on a mug this year? Do you want this? And every year I'm like, yeah, maybe I do want that on a mouse yeah. pad or a mug. Yeah. So I love that you still do that.
Yep.
Tis the season.
You have my proof.
That's right. lpzoo.org. Have a great night, Josh. We'll talk to you again
Thank
soon.
You guys.
Thank you.
You.
Talk
Bye, to Josh. You soon. Bye.
Talk to you again. That's Josh Rupp, Director of Events for Lincoln Park Zoo. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, 720 WGN.
Here comes the Spider-Man.
Not many of us left our childhoods without wanting to at least be a superhero of some sort. I mean, maybe there are those of you out there that just like never liked any superhero at all, and I don't understand you. If you didn't, my whole world was all about superheroes, and one of my favorites was Spider-Man. Joining us on the line is our chief geek officer, Elliot Serrano. Yesterday when Stan Lee passed away, many people thought of Elliot right away. Elliot, is that a strange thing to find out that when something this, you know, I guess this tragic on this level happens, people think of you?
Yeah, I was I guess I was flattered to say,
right?
It's always flattering when you're associated with your obsessions, I guess. So and you know, because like, a lot of folks knew that my encounter with Stan Lee at the C2E2 a few years back. A lot of folks got to know me on social media and, you know, in comic book media after that. So, yeah, I had a lot of folks flash to that, say, oh, the first thing I thought about was you, yeah. You know, and all the, and all that. So it was very, it was, I guess, you know, touching that people thought about me, although I was thinking about Stan's family.
But, yeah, of course. Well, so let's talk a little bit about how much, you know, as a comic book writer yourself, Ash and the Evil Dead and the Grumpy Cat, sorry. Sorry,
Grumpy
buddy.
Cat.
Sorry,
yeah.
buddy. It's a different line. It's a competing line. It's like the Aldi of comic books. As a writer yourself, talk a little bit about how much Stan Lee's sort of art, you know, the arc of his life, because there were a lot of ups and downs, weren't there? And that's really the way an artist's life can often go.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for those who may not be familiar with Stan Lee, he was, you know, for a very long time a writer. He wrote for advertising, but he also, you know, he wrote a lot of comic books back in the day. And this is before the creation of Spider-Man and all the other heroes. He did romance comics and war comics and those sorts of things. And the comic book industry in itself was kind of, in you know, kind of lagging. You know, the war was over, you know, Superman and Batman, you know, who got a lot of attention during wartime, you know, just didn't have that same luster that they had before. And Stan Lee has remarked how this was in the early 60s where he was so tired of being really a writer or going to parties and afraid that people would ask him what he did for a living because they say, you know, what do? He goes, well, I'm a writer. And then he'd have to explain he wrote comic books. So he just wanted to quit it. And so the story goes, he said he was so tired of it, he wanted to quit because he didn't like the way comics were being written. And his wife said to him, well, you know, if you don't like it, just, you know, write that comic book the way you'd like to, you know, write it. You know, write it the way you'd want to read it. And, you know, if the publisher doesn't like it, they're going to fire you. So you were going to quit anyway. What's the big deal?
Oh.
And, yeah, and at that point, that's when he created the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man. And, you know, as you say, the rest is history.
Elliot, I was just reading, you know, just a little bit of background about him yesterday and this morning as well. But what I thought was cool was when he was asked the question, and I want to know your answer to this, were there characters he thought weren't going to pan out? Like, did he ever say? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, because, it had never been done before.
Yeah.
You know, at that point. Superheroes, like if you read, you know, the Justice Society, you know, Batman, Superman, all those characters, the heroes were friends. You know, they got along. They you know, they were chummy. There was very little drama between the heroes themselves. And it was pretty much punch the villain, put him in jail, game over. Right. Spider-Man was a kid with angst. You know, he wasn't this all-powerful hero who had no problems. He was, you know, a high schooler who struggled with, you know, social anxieties and money problems. And he, you know, he's awkward around girls and all that kind of thing. And he honestly thought, you know, who's going to want to read that? You know, I want to read it, but who else is? Mm-hmm. And, of course, he found out that people did want to read that.
And that's what's so wonderful about the stories that that Stan Lee told, you know, through this awkward kid, you know, Peter Parker, which so many people seem to identify with. Last night, that's what came up more than anything in some of our conversations, was that people loved how much of a smart aleck Peter Parker is, mm-hmm. you know, and that personality that I think that just jumped off the page, literally. I
mean. Well, it's true. I mean, you know, you think, see, Peter Parker himself isn't such a smart aleck. It's when he puts on that mask
right.
and he becomes Spider-Man, that's when he gets really snarky.
Because he can hide.
And it,
yep.
Yeah. Right. And then that's kind of like, I think about it, you know, the character of Peter Parker really informed a lot of me when I was young because, I mean, I was kind of, like, I'm a, you know, been a socially awkward kind of guy, but you use humor as a tool to work your way through, you know, different social challenges or dealing with discomfort or stuff like that. And, you know, if you can come up with a one-liner when a guy dressed as a rhino is throwing a car at you, I guess I can deal with, you know, joking around if, you know, I split my pants in front of the prettiest girl in school.
Does she still remember? That's the bad thing about Facebook is that you can find out if they still remember those stories.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She still remembers that.
Oh, boy. From the 630, Iron Man was a minor character, and look where Iron Man is now in movies.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the things. Yes.
No, I was going to say, sorry. I was going to say, that's a great point, too. But let's be honest. You know, the reason Iron Man took off like he did, you got to thank Robert Downey Jr. for that. I mean, he really made that character what it is. When the Iron Man movie was first made, as far as the comic books go, Iron Man was a solid B-list character. You know, he was not, he wasn't nearly as big as the X-Men, was not big as Batman or Superman. And then, boom, that first movie hits, and next thing you know, the character takes off. And then, of course, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is born. And I think a lot of folks, I wish I could say that it made the comic books sell more because they didn't.
Right.
But they did. They certainly raised the awareness that people had of those characters.
Well, and Jon Favreau's writing in that first script had so much to do with bringing that alive and that collaboration with Robert Downey Jr. as well, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. And again, and when you think about it, Iron Man, a character that Stan Lee created, essentially a war profiteer, finding out that, you know, the things that he's created has brought bad into the world. And Stan Lee talked about the challenge of making Tony Stark a sympathetic character. He goes, because for the most part, he goes, in the time when he was writing that character, you know, people didn't like rich folk, you know. So making an arrogant rich guy a hero, how are you going to do that? So he kind of had to bring Tony Stark down a notch and give him that whole thing with the accident that affected his heart, and he needs the, you know, the Iron Man costume is essentially his life support system, and that kind of made him more human and more humane.
There are plenty of successful comic book characters and heroes, and a lot of them have been in the movies, but no other creator reached the sort of status that Stan Lee did. What went into that element of it, do you think, Elliot?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I say, you know, we're going to look back on the time that Stan, you know, of all the things that Stan Lee did. The only other person I can think that had as significant an impact on American pop culture was Walt Disney.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's Mickey Mouse, the most recognized character in the world. Next to him, Spider-Man. You know, you know, I don't think we're going to truly appreciate what he did until years later when we go, wow, look at how long these characters have endured, you know, long after the man who created them has passed on. You know, for him it was, I guess, right place, right time. Certain things happened, and, you know, it just caught on, you know. So, and we were very fortunate for that, too, that now we have these characters and these and all these stories that we can share and enjoy.
And I know a lot of people get, you know, they're tired of the comic book movies. You even hear movie reviewers saying there's too many comic book stories, whether you have them on Netflix or all the Infinity War movies and the Avengers. But, you know, I look at my kids and I see how much, especially Griffin, enjoys. Elliot, I went home last night and Griffin was wearing his Spider-Man pajamas to bed. And Steve sent them both out to school in their Avengers t-shirts too today. It was very sweet.
See, Griffin is, you know, he's like a new Peter Parker. He's like Peter Parker 2.0, you know, really smart kid, you know, although he doesn't have near the social awkwardness that I had when I was his age. And he looks really good in that suit. I mean, he could totally cosplay as Spider-Man. He'd pull it off really well.
Yeah, I agree. He last year, I don't think the costume from last year fits anymore. But because he's not a big fan of the newest version of Spider-Man. He didn't like the last kid, but he loved Tobey Maguire, which again was a series that started to bring Stan Lee back. That's when I learned about the cameos. Was he ever in cameos before the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies?
He actually has a cameo in the very first the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie.
Okay.
Which actually never hit theaters. It was only made because Roger Corman had the rights to it, and he had to make a movie, otherwise he'd lose the rights. And he has a cameo in there. But the problem is that you can't see it because the only way you can get the movie is on bootleg.
Oh.
Wow.
You have to be bad about it.
Let's
take a break because I hope Andre doesn't mind, but I could geeking out and dorking out.
I keep learning new things. I didn't know about the cameos either until.
You didn't know about the cameos?
No.
Well, let's find out which movie will be Stan Lee's final cameos. That information came out today. We are hanging out with our chief geek officer, Elliot Serrano. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Elliot Serrano and geektome.net. Is that still right?
Yeah, geektome.net is my blog where I have all my social media and everything running through there.
We have, by the way, I'm going to read some of the texts when we come back. That's Elliot Serrano. More in a moment. You can call or text us anytime. It's your conversation, too. 312-981-7200. Again, the number is 312-981-7200. More in a moment. Hey, Elliot. I have a question for you. We are talking to Elliot Serrano. He is a chief geek officer for the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And actually, the way Andrea, have I ever told you how Elliot and I met? He's also a writer. Yeah, he's a writer for Red Eye. And producer Keith Conrad wanted to talk about the George Lucas Museum that was supposed to come to our lakefront.
Which I was a huge fan of.
And I believe Elliot has posted many times, look what we could have had, Elliot. Isn't that pretty much the tone of things?
You always bring that one up. And while I love recounting how we first met,
yes,
it's always with a tinge of sadness.
Yeah. Right,
it reminds me of that, you know, because I was so, I was totally ready to apply to work at the George Lucas Museum.
Aw, but you know what? There's so many homeless animals that have found their forever homes because of people like you at the Anti-Cruelty Society. So.
Well, yes, and everyone at the shelter always talks about how they're somewhat glad that the Lucas Museum isn't coming to town because they get to hold on to meet it.
Well, you found out right away. I was a dork. We've pretty much distinguished. See, Elliot's a geek. I'm
a dork,
and I would say Griffin's a nerd.
Okay,
right.
Explain, is there a difference between the three? I know there is.
Elliot's probably best Elliot, I think you can probably lay this out for us a little bit better than I can.
I think the most simplified versions of it are this. To be a geek means that you're very passionate for something.
Okay.
You know, you're very passionate for chocolate. You can be a chocolate geek, right?
Okay.
You know, the bar of chocolate makes you crazy. You geek out for chocolate. I'm a Star Wars geek. You know, I love Star Wars. I geek out about it. I'm very passionate for it. Whereas a nerd is someone who has a lot of technical knowledge about a particular thing. You can be a history nerd. You can be a technology nerd, a computer nerd, something that involves a lot of real technical knowledge or know facts and analytics. That's something that you would be nerdy. And then dork, you know, being a bit of a dork is kind of like, that's more the social aspect, not what you're passionate about, not necessarily what you know, but kind of like how you interact with the world. So you're a little bit goofy, a little bit dorky. You know, you don't come across as one of the cool kids.
Yes.
You know, which is fine. And then you can have kind of combinations of all those elements in one person.
Yeah, got it. I think I got it.
Yes. I'm a dork because I love to do the dress up and just be dorky about it. Yeah. I have no, you know what it is, Elliot? It's having no shame about it either is what a dork.
But then I would say you're a cosplay geek because you are very passionate about it.
That's true. All right. Well,
you do like it. You really get into it. So that's why I would call you a geek.
All right. I'm a geek. I'm a dork about being a geek. How's that?
Now,
I was mentioning the moment where Stan Lee's characters hit in such a way that made them a huge commodity in Hollywood was a Tobey Maguire series. Would you say that's accurate?
Well, that's when you really started seeing them. I mean, the first Spider-Man movie, which was directed by Sam Raimi, and starring Tobey Maguire, was huge because people had been waiting years for a big budget Spider-Man movie to come out. It had been held up in the courts for, you know, Lord knows how long. And when it was finally made, it really paid a lot of service to what people had been waiting to see in a Spider-Man movie for the longest time. And yeah, when you get the Stan Lee cameo, of course, people geeked out about that.
Yes, it was a lot of fun to see. The 708 says, I liked the most recent Spider-Man movie. He was clearly in high school, just like in the comics. That's from our friend Glenn in Oak Lawn. And I like Tom Holland. Griffin's still very attached to Tobey Maguire's portrayal of Spider-Man. But I have to be honest, I like Tom Holland.
Well, you know, it's what's happening right now, especially with Spider-Man. You know, you're going to have different camps. I mean, I'm with Griffin. I am a big fan of the Tobey Maguire take on Peter Parker. Not so much of his take on Spider-Man because, you know, in the Sam Raimi movies, Spider-Man didn't crack any jokes as he was fighting his enemies, which was always the thing I loved in the comic books. He was constantly cracking jokes. Back and forth. It was that witty, almost Aaron Sorkin-like banter
right.
that he would have going, you know, as he was in the middle of a fight, which was a great thing that they brought up in Civil War, the last Captain America movie. You know, and at one point, you know, because Spider-Man is constantly rattling off jokes and jokes and jokes, someone said, is this kid ever going to shut up? You know?
Right. So, Tom, who's your favorite? I haven't had a chance to ask Tom Holland.
My favorite superhero?
No, well, you can tell me your favorite superhero. Yeah.
Daredevil.
Oh.
And I really love him. And I know it's weird, but I love him because he's blind.
Oh, no, it's not weird at all.
I love that.
I think that's one of the, I don't know. And I love that he's kind of street level. Like, he's not necessarily fighting, you know, aliens and stuff, which is cool. But, like, he's taking care of everyday people in Hell's Kitchen, New York.
Yep.
And he's also a lawyer, so he's on the other side of it as well. And he's got all that Catholic guilt. And I'm just like, I identify with that, you know?
Right.
That's great.
That's a good one.
Elliot, when you interviewed, before we go, I wanted to ask, but when you interviewed Stan Lee, you know, what was your sense of, you know, the level that he achieved because of where Marvel has gone, whether it was on the big screen, and I don't know if at that point it had gone to Netflix as well to expand the universe, but what was your sense having met him and interviewed him?
Here is my thing, and this is what I said when I first met him, and I remember talking about this on your radio station the night before I hosted his panel. I said to him, I am more nervous meeting you now than I would have been meeting the Pope. Because he was like the Pope of comic book geeks. The level he was at, you know, how many people do you really know that created the comic books? Like, does anyone really know what Bob Kane, who created Batman, looks like?
No.
You know, you have to be a total nerd. I mean, if you can find pictures of him, but how many people know that he's synonymous with Batman? Or any of the creators that worked on the Batman comics, do you even know what these men look like? Everyone knows what Stan Lee looks like. And again, he will always be remembered as I would say he's the Walt Disney of Marvel Comics, or I can say that, you know, Walt Disney was the Stan Lee of Disney World. So,
yeah.
There's a good back and forth there. You can say who made more of an impact on pop culture.
The cameos, Stanley did film his last cameos for the final Infinity War movie and the Avengers 4 movie, but of course his legacy will go on. And there's so much more to talk about. I'm sure we'll talk more Stanley on Friday, because I have to ask about Hawkeye, who was supposed to be deaf, and I didn't know that, and I don't have time right now to get into it. Elliot.
In one ear.
Right.
Well, in one ear.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that he's played that way by Jeremy Renner.
No.
What's his name? Who plays him?
Jeremy Renner, yes. Renner.
All right, cool. All right, Elliot, we'll see you on Friday.
See you all.
Check out Elliot on social media, Elliot Serrano, and on his page, geektome.net. Have a great night, Elliot. I'll see you later.
Thank you, guys. See you Friday.
Bye. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
B-double-E-double-R-U-N, Baron. B-double-E-double-R-U-N, Baron. All we need is a 10 and a 5 or a car and a key and a sober driver. B-double-E-double-R-U-N, Baron.
We are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And, there are a lot of people who are like, you know, maybe talking about beer is extraneous or you're just being goofy about it. But there's one thing that I love about the brand new Brewseum that they're bringing to life and sharing with folks, that it's not just a beverage here in Chicago. Its history is a part of what gives us so much of our unique flavor in so many ways. Joining us on the line is the founder of the Chicago Brewseum. It's Liz Garibay. Hey, Liz, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I was just thinking about, before I brought you on, I was trying to think of a way to introduce you. And Andre, I don't know how familiar you are with the Schlitz signs at certain places all over Chicago.
Yes.
There was a point where they were trying to make sure that Schlitz taverns received landmark status. And I thought about how much, like what a great way to sort of preserve a part of our history. And that's what Liz is doing through the Brewseum. Tell us a little bit about the Brewseum, Liz.
We have a great team of folks involved in the beer industry and the museum world, cultural world, authors, historians, who really just kind of value beer in a different way. You know, we say that beer is more than just a beverage. It's a cultural force that has built community and has built cities and has the ability to make change. And, looking at beer in this way, I think really kind of gives you a different perspective on our history and culture, not just in Chicago and the Midwest or even the country, but all over the world in various points in time. And, we're trying to build the world, really, the world's first museum dedicated to telling a lot of these stories. So not so much about this is how beer is made. I always tell folks that if you want to learn how beer is made, go to one of the great breweries in our city and take a tour. Really, what we're trying to do is one day have a facility, a 30,000-square-foot facility, that allows you to visit galleries to learn about these stories, about how beer has played a role throughout our history and culture.
I wouldn't have even. Go ahead, Andrea.
No, I was going to say, you know what I think is really cool, too, is that, you know, when we went to U of I, you'd always have to choose between the Milwaukee beers and the St. Louis beers. And now Chicago is home to, I think at one point, Liz, correct me if I'm wrong, they said now Chicago is either first or second when it comes to all these independent craft breweries that are popping up everywhere, like Wrigleyville, South Loop, Bucktown. Is that true that we are like either one or two now when it comes to all these new little breweries? I shouldn't say little anymore.
I don't know that we're one or two. We live in like this golden age of beer right now.
Yeah.
Chicago certainly has, I want to say Chicago's land as a whole has about 150-ish breweries. There are also so many other great beer cities in our country. But Chicago certainly is a major player in the beer industry right now. It's certainly a major player in the beer industry during the 19th century. If you live in Chicago, you're a beer lover, you're in a good place.
We're doing okay.
Side
note,
yes.
I'm excited to learn that you two are Illini.
Yeah.
Illini.
Did you ever live in the dorms, Liz?
I did. I lived in Snyder Hall.
Oh, it's Snyder Hall. All right.
I was ISR and you were...
I was Allen Hall.
Yeah.
You guys are big girls.
We're big time, you
it
know.
It was a facade.
I mean, it's kind of not shocking that I live in a dorm in a six pack, and here I am as a beer historian. Yeah. Music, so.
Did you ever think?
You know, it's funny because that was where I in Chicago when I was growing up, I was not of age to be able to drink, and nor was I interested in beer ever as a kid. But in Champaign was where I saw the first brewery. It was one of the first ones that I think that was on campus. It was like a pizza and microbrewery. And it was the first time I ever saw it like inside a place where you just go hang out, drink, and eat.
Yeah, it was Joe's Brewery when I was there.
I feel like it was Joe's Brewery.
Yeah, and that's...
Oh, yeah, Joe's. Yeah,
remember?
Sure.
Yeah, they actually had real glasses instead of the red Solo cups. And then you could see where the beer was made. It was very high class, high end.
For us.
For us, it was huge, yeah.
Yeah, if you weren't messing around at cans or COs and beer buckets.
None of those orange plastic cups you got at cans or COs.
Yeah. Yes, or the buckets.
Or how about here we go. We're drinking the wall at O'Malley's. That's just wrong.
Yes, at midnight.
Although I will say there's something to be said about quarter beers on Sunday.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Let's not get started on upside down margaritas. Anyway, bringing all kinds of memories back. You're right, though. American Pie at midnight, O'Malley's, in about an inch of beer.
Yeah, yes.
On the floor.
And your feet are like cluck, 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 sticking to the floor.
Yeah. But how did you get involved with the Brewseum, Liz?
I've been a museum professional for most of my career. I started my career very young, at the age of 15, at the Field Museum. And I just kind of always was fascinated by ancient history. And then I went to graduate school for it. And I realized pretty quickly that I didn't want to stick in academia. Just wasn't for me.
Me and you both, so, Liz. I was getting my PhD in history. I'm like, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah. So I was on that route of in grad school on the East Coast, and I realized that I just don't want to do this. And so I kind of was thinking more about the things I'm passionate about, and certainly history was a part of it. But I decided that. One thing I really, truly loved was learning about the history of my own city where I grew up, Chicago. And so I started looking at the beginnings of 19th century urban development in our country and what that meant for us as a whole and my hometown. And really, honestly, the truth is that I really love to drink. And I love to sit in bars and listen to these old guys tell me all these stories. And I realized pretty quickly that a lot of the tales they were telling me were valuable oral histories. So I started to sort of go down these rabbit holes that they guided me on, and started to collect, stories from them, but also do my own research in various places. And I would come and just create like a history of a place. And what I realized was that was not only valuable to me for that individual story, but once you start connecting the dots of the history of bars and other places in that neighborhood, you start getting the history of the neighborhood, and then you connect the dots further, and you start getting the history of a city. And so I quickly just developed this passion and this career path of looking at history through the lens of alcohol. And, beer for me was a simple sort of vehicle because, the Midwest is so built on this particular beverage. The beginnings of our great cities here are certainly rooted in beer, but also, the country as a whole. And everyone, if you think about it, everyone, no matter who you are, where you come from, your age bracket, your occupation, your economic bracket, everyone can relate to beer in some way, shape, or form. And so it's really easily accessible. It's an accessible thing for anybody.
And I love I like the historical ties that you kind of pop in there too, because I knew what Goose Island was as a beer because, college, you're all Goose Island, then that's what you're hearing. And then you come back home and you think, oh, wait a minute.
Wait, that's ours.
This is a whole history, and Goose Island itself and everything that went, everything that went on there back from, World's Fair days.
Absolutely. So, in thinking about all of these things, I just, again, looking at the stories that I would extract from actual people, to the research I would do, to what I could learn about my own city and my own, region, I just realized that there's something to it. And using that background of my museum world, I started to research a lot of museums around the country and around the world, and saw that nothing like a beer museum of this kind existed. So I started to build a team, and I really wanted to get people from a variety of industries involved. And it's funny you mentioned Goose Island. The founder of Goose Island, John Hall, is on my board of directors.
Oh, that's great.
People like that are a part of this. So, it's people who are passionate in their own ways and believe in beer and being more than just a beverage. And folks involved in different industries who really want to make this museum happen.
Well, in addition to having, you know, sort of guiding people through this history and how much beer changed and what was there from the very beginning, from when we were an outpost, I'm looking at the information about your exhibit at the Field Museum and how beer transformed Chicago from a frontier outpost to a thriving metropolis, brewing up Chicago. And I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back in just a moment. And also that you have craft beer from local, regional, national, and international breweries as well there, don't you?
Yeah, for sure.
I want to talk about that when we come back. Where can people get more information? What's the website?
Yeah, you can go to www.chicagobrewsium.org. We are a 501c3 nonprofit institution. So go to the chicagobrewsium.org.
Excellent. I want to talk more about the facility, too, and what's in store. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show on Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We were talking to Liz Garibay. She's the founder of Chicago Brewsium. More when we come back. The Chicago Brewsium highlights the dynamic culture and innovative history of one of the world's most vibrant industries. I had the pleasure of going to the Guinness Storehouse when I was in Dublin, Andrea, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I love that Liz Garibay is bringing such a great destination for Chicagoans. She is the founder of the Chicago Brewsium. Liz, tell us a little bit more. Now, is this in a permanent location yet, or are you working on that part of it still?
Yeah, we're working on a permanent location. We aim to open doors to our actual museum in 2021. But in the meantime, you can certainly catch us. We're fortunate enough to have fantastic partners throughout the country, throughout the world, actually. Cultural partners, brewery partners, you name it, people are into it. And one of our great cultural partners is the Field Museum, and we started having conversations about doing an exhibit together, having the museum actually do something at the Field Museum, and got to work on it earlier this year, and we opened our first exhibition at the Field Museum, and that is on display until 2020, and that's kind of really our temporary home until we get our permanent location.
What a great first venture as part of the Chicago Brewsium is to have the collaboration with the Field Museum. And that,
they've been great. You know, we, like I said, we've had so many great cultural partners doing events and just different things around town for the last couple of years. And, you know, a credit to them is that they really saw our vision, and they have a great series of Field Museum beers. So they actually understood the power and the value of the stories that beer can tell outside of just, you know, being in your actual hand. And like I said, we started chatting about things, and it's really kind of an extraordinary story because museums work really well together, but for a historic and world-renowned institution like the Field Museum to really open its doors to a little guy like us and really an unknown guy like us was pretty extraordinary. So we built a fantastic relationship and have our first exhibit there. So, yeah, it's a good kudos to them, too.
I also love the fact that the Brewsium is going to have not only public programs but classes as well.
Hello.
Yeah, once we get our physical location and our home, you know, the goal is to have 30,000 square feet where we have exhibition spaces and classroom space and event space and a beer garden. And, of course, a brewery where we can make beer that is really sort of rooted in a lot of the stories that we're telling. So I like to tell people that the brewery will be an extension of the museum, and the museum is an extension of the brewery.
Nice. And you mentioned how, you know, when you started visiting different locations throughout Chicago, you realized how much beer had a part of our oral history. We've talked before about great neighborhood dive bars.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, you kind of have the same rotation of characters, even if it's a different person. You've always got that one guy. Do you have some favorites, Liz, in Chicago, some of your neighborhood bars, joints that you know, that you'd like to hang out at?
Yeah, anyone who knows me will tell you that my favorite bar in the city and probably, honestly, the world is Old Town Ale House.
Yes!
I've been going there. I'm actually, honestly, to be very honest with you guys, I'm actually talking to you from the basement of the Old Town Ale House right now.
Oh, it's fitting.
I've been in there for, now, does a sausage guy still come around, or is it just a tamale guy comes around?
Tamale guy, yeah.
Yeah, because there used to be a sausage guy with, like, these mustards and stuff. When you had too much Sambuca, yeah, that was years, I'm a little bit older, I'm sensing.
That's like throwback to the German days of Old Town.
I know. I've been performing at Zany's around the corner. corner for almost 20 years. So that's
oh,
been
awesome.
Yeah, so a lot of, I mean, you when you go in there, and well, you know, Michael Shannon watched the Academy Awards from there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So actually, it's great that you guys mentioned Michael. Michael's a regular here at the Ale House. And Michael actually narrated a video for us in the exhibit at the Field Museum.
Cool.
Outstanding. Well
so
done.
It all kind of all comes together. But yeah, Old Town Ale House is special. I've been coming here for years. I'm an Old Town kid. It's one of those places where I'd walk by as a kid and I always thought, what's going on in there? And I realized the history of it. And then when I was able to legally drink, I started coming here. And when I started working, I worked at the Chicago History Museum for a while. And
oh, yeah.
It was so close that I could not come here.
It's the best place for a shot and a beer. I mean, it's cash only.
Yeah, it's so full of history.
Yep.
And, you know, I've been a regular for a while, and I actually have a podcast with the owner, Bruce. So it certainly holds a special place in my heart.
Do you know Patricia Nelson? She was a bartender. I don't know how long you've been hanging at the Ale House. She almost took over because that ownership, the handoff and the change of ownership was kind of an interesting deal with that, wasn't it?
Yeah, Art and Bee were the original owners, and they didn't have any kids. And, you know, I always say that your bar family is probably as important, if not more important, than your actual family. God knows, you know, I often want to spend more time with my bar family than my real family a lot of times.
Right.
And so Bee and Art didn't have any kids, and when, you know, they realized that their time on this earth was coming to an end, they decided to hand off the bar. And they did to a couple in the bar who was working here, and Bruce and Toby continued to run the show.
Yeah,
that's cool. I hope the Bruseum has a whole section to dive bars, like Patty was talking about, because we have some great ones that some not in existence any longer, like Marie's Riptide Lounge.
I know, it's terrible.
Remember that?
It's terrible.
Yeah,
there's so many great bars that have come and gone.
And Richard's used to sell hard-boiled eggs.
I think they still do, actually.
Do they really? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Marie's Riptide Lounge.
Remember off Armitage?
I believe Julia Sweeney based a Pat on a bartender. Was that the one that had, like, the bicyclist on the rope behind the... There was something...
Oh, it was real narrow. Like,
yeah.
You walked in off Armitage. Right off the Kennedy.
Right off the Kennedy. Yeah.
Yeah, and you walked in, and it was super narrow, and they had booths.
Yes.
It almost looked like a diner.
I'm fairly certain that that's where Julia Sweeney based her character,
really?
Pat, on the bartender. Yes.
Oh, that's... awesome.
I feel that's terrible great. If that's not true.
I know.
And people are like, wait a minute, that was a woman.
It's gone.
It's gone, so no
it's
hard feelings.
It's on, right.
No hard feelings. Well, Liz, we'd love to have you in studio sometime as you continue your journey toward opening the Chicago Bruseum, and we encourage everyone to stop by the exhibit at the Field Museum. What are we leaving on the table? What do you want to make sure people know about?
Exhibit is up at the Field Museum. It's called Brewing Up Chicago, How Beer Transformed the City. It focuses on Chicago from 1833 to 1893. And it really takes a deeper look at the immigrants who built Chicago and the beer industry and who really had a hard time being in our city. I say history repeats itself. So if you go through and you hear about things and you see about things and learn about things that sort of make sense today, it's no surprise. And that was sort of the reason we went with that route. We're going to have all kinds of events throughout the next couple of years around the exhibit at various cultural institutions, at great bars, breweries, restaurants. We have a special dinner happening coming up here at Girl and the Goat, the first ever beer dinner that they've ever done as a benefit for us. We'll be posting that on our website soon. And, you know, we're going to have a little bit of everything for everyone. So the best way to just really keep up to date with things happening on the exhibit or event is to go on our website, chicagobruseum.org, subscribe to our newsletter, and get all the information that way.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Liz.
I want to hear more about your story and look forward to doing so. Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you
so
much.
See you, Liz.
More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN. Andrea, we missed you last night. You had the day off trying to recuperate because you did a 72-hour run on election day.
We did a power election week, yeah.
That was you were asking about the conference call, and Todd Manley was talking about our coverage stationwide.
Yeah.
And I have to say, so much of it had to do with reporters like you and then sharing all that information and making sure we were all to date. I got to post this photo of you, Kim Gordon, and Judy Pilak running the newsroom on election night as the returns are coming in from all over the city,
yeah.
the state. state and the country, and it was a great night.
It was.
And now, because you were off last night, one of the things that you did miss was I talked to Jen Zanotti.
Yes.
Our Motivational Monday expert. Yeah. She's also a positivity expert. And one of the things we talked about was the holidays and how to manage that stress. And comedian Michael Palasek said what he does, they play a lot of games.
Yes.
And John Tatey has brought a suggestion for games that perhaps, I don't know if it's good for Thanksgiving or not, but it's something you can play with. You didn't know where this was going, did you? You're like, wow, Pat's going
I knew you were setting me up. I didn't know how it was going to go, but I knew you were teeing me up for sure.
Yes. And you know, like we've played, I prefer board games. I prefer like being around a table and, you know, having, I love the tactile nature of it. My husband does not necessarily. He's like, do they make that for Wii?
And he likes the Wii? Like computer games?
Like life. Like they make a, there are Hasbro game versions on Wii. You can play Mousetrap, Life, Clue.
That's right.
It's just not the same. It's not the same.
Especially Life. You must spin that wheel.
Yeah.
You must have the tactile feel of spinning that little plastic wheel.
And the little car, and you start filling it up with people.
With people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life is not a very good game, but the props save it.
Exactly. Yeah. I have to agree. Like, well, Mousetrap is such a parent's nightmare. It's so many pieces.
All little parts,
A little kicking boot. I still have it somewhere. So you have a suggestion for everyone. It is a video game that everyone can play?
It is. It's a TV game, maybe, let's call it. This is by a studio right here in the city, Jackbox Games. And
You don't know Jack.
That's right.
It's the same company.
That's right. The creators of You Don't Know Jack. Have you had some of them on the show? Maybe?
I have not. I think I should.
They're delightful. You should. They're smart people, and they've made You Don't Know Jack. You may remember even from going back to the CD-ROM era. This is the same company, and they have put out a series of what they call Jackbox Party Packs, and each of these party packs has a set of games that you can play with a bunch of people from 3 up to 8.
Okay.
You know, so it's perfect for Thanksgiving or for a, you know, a cocktail party, or, you know, I break this out all the time when I have friends over. One of our favorite, so I just got Jackbox Party Pack 5. And one of my favorite things about the party pack is, you know, maybe you get something for your PlayStation and then you got to get like 4 controllers and all that. You got to get the equipment with it. Not with the Jackbox games, because you play it on your phone. So you just say, everybody get out your phone and type in this code. Go to the Jackbox website and type in this code. And the little web page keeps in sync with the game you're playing on the TV.
Oh,
so you don't need controllers. Everybody's ready to go with their phones. And there are games like, in the latest pack, there's a game called Split the Room, which I love, where basically you have to devise a hypothetical situation that some people will say yes to and some people will say no. You want to give people a really hard decision. They give you these sort of comical setups and you fill in the blank to make it a really hard decision for people to vote yes, I would do that, or no, I wouldn't do that. And you're trying to split the room.
And then are you pitted against each other to like argue why your position is? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
All right. No.
I wasn't sure. And then you have to arm wrestle. And then there's Jell-O. I'm kidding.
Here's kind of give an example, because I love the split the room game. One of the hypotheticals was, you have the ability to erase anybody's memory of you going back 60 seconds, but that memory is replaced with blank. Now your pants fall down at the airport. Do you erase people's memories? So I'm trying to fill in that blank with what people's memories are going to be replaced with and make it a hard decision. Would you rather have people remember your pants falling down at the airport or whatever you put in the blank?
Whatever memory you plant there?
Whatever memory we,
labeled to replace.
So I would fill in that blank, and then everybody else would have to choose which scenario they want to go with. And again, you're trying to split the room.
Okay.
So you're kind of trying to figure out the psychology of the people in your family or your friend group or whoever. I know it sounds a little complicated as I explained it, but it is super fun in practice and easy. All the games in these Jackbox Party Packs are easy to pick up. It's like 30 seconds of explanation and you're ready to go. I can't recommend these more.
And I love our friends at Cards Against Humanity, but this sounds a little more family appropriate for ages.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. I mean, it can get a little
esoteric for younger ones.
It can be a touch raunchy or a little blue, but it's not that bad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's not, I mean, I love Cards Against Humanity, although I have pictures of my mom playing Cards Against Humanity with Elliot at Thanksgiving.
Oh, really? It's not quite Cards Against Humanity level raunchiness.
Well, and Jack, you don't know, Jack was just a brilliant creation. I think they started in the 90s.
In the 90s, that's right.
Yeah, they really, did you ever see the You Don't Know Jack games?
CD-ROM like, games?
Oh, maybe.
It's basically a trivia game.
There's a new You Don't Know Jack in the latest party pack, in fact, as well, Patty. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're still making them.
I'm jacked about that.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Are you a big game? I know you do, you know, you play a lot of video games and things like that, but you also like to be able to share the social aspect of playing with a group of people.
You know, Patty, in my lifetime, it's gone from, you know, you're sitting there with your brother or your buddy or whatever, and you both got the controllers, to everybody's online, right? Which has been great, and amazing communities have formed in these online games. But I do still have a fondness for what is now called couch multiplayer, where you're in the same room, looking at the same screen, and just inhabiting the same world, rather than you're looking at your screen and somebody on the other side of the country is looking at their screen. It's just a more communal experience when you're in the same room, and games sort of got away from that for a while. And in the past few years, I have seen this resurgence. Another one, if people want another recommendation, Overcooked on the PlayStation is another very popular couch multiplayer game. If you're looking to get people together in the same room and have some fun together, there are games out there for you.
I'm on the Jackbox website right now, taking a look at all the items.
There's a lot of games, right?
There are a lot of
games. And I'll admit, not every game in the five party packs has been a winner, but they try out different ideas. Another great one from Party Pack 4 and previous is called Fibbage, where you basically try to make up, well, almost like fake news to convince other people that that's the truth.
Oh, I see it. Fibbage right there with the Pinocchio. And then
there you go. Yeah.
Fibbage. Makes sense.
Is a big hit in my family.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Do you have what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Are you staying here or going back to New Hampshire?
I'm going to Oklahoma, actually, where my wife's family is, because my sister-in-law just had a baby.
Oh! Aww. Happy uncling. Thanks. Is it your first nephew, niece?
No, it's not. No.
Oh, do you have so?
I got a bunch of them, yeah.
I have altogether 23 nieces and nephews.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. Have I never talked about this before?
No.
Steve has five sisters.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. He has five sisters. Oh, I have siblings of some sort. And they have kids, too. So, yeah, altogether we have 23.
Wow.
Maybe it's 24. And then we have grand nieces and nephews now, too.
Now, you don't have to buy for all of them.
Don't get me started on Christmas's past.
That was my question.
No, you know what? I had a friend she had a family of, I think there was eight siblings, and they were getting married and having kids and whatnot. They, at one point, bought for all of them, and I said, are you crazy?
Okay, let me tell you the problem with that when we come back. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis on 720 WGN. Yeah, let's go there. Yeah, it's the holidays are coming up. Let's just open that can of worms. More in a moment. 665-4500. One more time. That number is 708-665-4500. So the holidays are coming up, and I think Andre and John were talking about nieces and nephews and whether or not you buy for everybody. At one point, I'm trying to remember what number we were up to. My husband has five sisters, and when we got married, there were, I want to say he had, if I had 21, so maybe 16 nieces and nephews. That sounds right, because like one sister had four kids, everyone had, like there were three, so that's seven. I'm trying to do the math.
Why all these huge families?
They're Irish. Well, I mean, I'm Irish Mexican. There's quite a few in my family as well, even though I'm an only child with siblings. Stop. I know. It's
That's funny. See, I'm an only child, but I have 14 first cousins. And for
yikes.
And for, you know, initially when we were younger, we would all get together and nobody bought. It was just, you know, everyone came, enjoyed each other's company, had dinner. So we didn't start that for the longest time. But I do have friends who have seven brothers and sisters, six brothers and sisters, and most, with the exception of the one, which I was telling you guys before the break, do a grab bag.
Right.
Except this one particular family bought for everyone. In-laws, kids, new kids, great-grandkids. And I was saying to you guys off the air, the problem with that is that then you end up buying just a bunch of junk.
Yes,
like,
I agree with
like this. A snowman made of marshmallows, you know, just so you can get everybody a gift. But what are you going to do with that?
Right.
You know?
I used to help Steve because we were dating 5 years before we got married, and then it took us another 2 years 3 years. It took us 3 years to get pregnant. So for 8 years, we were childless, and we're always buying gifts for every single niece and nephew.
And how many was it there?
At that point, it was 16 nieces and nephews.
And you bought something like, for everybody. Nice gifts.
And not like expensive, but I would say a lot of money. See, I mean, I would say he was spending between $300 and $500 on gifts, right?
That's so crazy.
And I would help wrap and put them in gift bags and do all these different things. And then Griffin was born. Not kidding you. His first Christmas, they were like, I don't think we should buy for all the nieces and nephews anymore. I'm like, really? I bring one to the party. You're like, let's not do that.
That's
anymore.
Awful.
Although at least you could say at least
we
he was
didn't
only,
do anymore.
At least he was only one,
yes.
And didn't fully realize. I mean, it would kind of stink if he was like 6 years old.
Well, yeah, but Patty realized it.
And all the other kids grew up with us buying them gifts. I mean, like some of the nieces and nephews were into their 20s. We were still buying them gifts.
That's crazy. That should have been cut off.
You can call right now, and you can argue with me on the air. But this is legit. What happened for years and years and years?
Oh, that's crazy.
And so they switch it to where you would grab your cousin, like you would take a cousin's name, and so the families would buy for that name that you got.
Right. Like the first cousin.
Like a secret Santa, right.
Yeah, like the older cousin should, you know, draw and then spend, I don't know, 50 or whatever year. And then, because what if a 12-year-old picks for you?
Yeah.
He can't.
Yeah, no, the parents would have to do it then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then we had to. No, it was
it's quite a stratified system you've got set up.
I know. I always thought, which is funny.
It's very complex.
Because I never had to do it.
She's right.
I never had to do it. But yeah, so like all the first cousins should buy for each other, then the second, then the third, because you're at different levels. And maybe, you know, the 50-year-old doesn't know what's cool for the 10-year-old, you know?
I'm having a panic attack again.
The other thing with buying for everybody, it's like, don't you feel like there's a limit to, I mean, you're the snowman made out of marshmallows, sure, but even if it's like nicer junk, like at a certain point, it is junk.
Junk, right.
Yes.
Right. How many candles can you have? Yeah. Right? How many, like, peppermint lotion?
I think I did. I think I got very passive aggressive at one point. I got so frustrated. I think I sent, the gift was, you have made a donation has been made in your name to the Corpus Callosum Disorder Foundation, which is what Declan's disorder is, because, you know, I got, everyone would like.
That was your gift?
I would send them a card saying, my gift to you is that you've made a donation.
What are they going to say?
Right, exactly.
I like what you were saying about the candles. Because you know when you walk by in the Yankee Candle in the mall and there's that very strong, I don't even know how to describe it, it's just like scent in capital
like
letters.
Pine
right?
or something.
Pine, it seems to smell like pine, doesn't it? To me, that's just the smell of giving up.
Yes.
Right?
It's so true.
When you just are out of ideas, that's the smell you encounter.
That is so true.
And I have to say that the fact that I'm even getting anxious talking about this is that it does show that we moved away from what Christmas was supposed to be about, spending time together, and you end up having the stress of running around shopping for each other. Now, Andrea, being only children, because I didn't grow up with any of my siblings. They were all, none of them, not for one day did I really live with any of my siblings, except for what my older brother, who died when I was very young. But you know, there's a lot of stress when you bring that many people. Don't you get stressed out with that many people, like all those cousins and
making
sure everyone's happy?
I don't, only because we don't see each other as much anymore. And growing up, we would only see each other really around the holidays. And then we started to hang out as we got older. Yeah, so it's festive. So like now for Thanksgiving, I think there's going to be 20 of us. And everyone's kind of split up now. You know, people are with different families and husbands and wives and kids and whatnot. But I always look forward to that because it's the one time, Christmas and Thanksgiving, it's the one time we all get to see each other.
Yeah.
And then maybe if my cousin George has a pool party in the summertime. But it wasn't like constant.
Right.
So I would sort of look forward to seeing, I would pretty much look forward to seeing them. Yeah.
That's why.
I still do. I love them very much.
I think that's why in my time since I've been with Steve, which is now 23 years, I think that's why I've grown to love Thanksgiving more, because it is about spending time with each other regardless of
good
how
point.
Big that group is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's fun.
Can I express one? I'm already a little disappointed with this holiday season.
Oh,
because, you know, I love the Skyline Studio, but I do fondly remember being in the Showcase Studio, and every November we'd get the decorations in here, and they put the beautiful Christmas tree and wreath over in this other studio that nobody ever uses, hall from the...
It's going to be very sad. I know. Well, because the tree time decorations were also... we were, like, window dressing on Michigan Avenue.
right?
That's right.
Now it's
the showcase studio would be done up. Oh. And look, I'm not the tree time decorations are beautiful. Nothing right. against the tree right. time people, but I like broadcasting surrounded yes. by lights and Santa and
Santa coming down the chimney. Remember the legs?
He's just stuck.
Santa legs.
Yeah. Like what happened to poor Santa? It's like people want to take advantage of him. I think. Well, the nice thing. Well, John, if you want, you could always go sit in there. We have a
There's
microphone.
A mic in there.
Yes, poor John.
We'll just have you sit in right. there, and we'll talk to you from this room if
we'll
that
be
works.
Waving.
Yeah. Hey, John. How are you doing? I'm holding out hope that they will also be decorating the studio.
Okay.
Only I'm a little bit worried because I think that there's something in the air that's making me sneeze. Uh-oh. I'm sorry.
Whoa. Oh, no.
Sorry. I think that there's some.
That's why they won't decorate in here.
Yeah.
You better break.
I know. I probably should take a break.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
a lot of sneezing right there. I was able to hide the other ones, but I've been sneezing like since we came back. I don't know what it is. I haven't.
Oh.
It's like, have you ever tried to sneeze while you're driving? You can't do it. But put it on the air. I have to get a break. Hold on a second. Okay. Back. Right. Yesterday, the iconic creator of comics like The Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man passed away. Stan Lee left us at the age of 95, and I was asking, in order to, you know, to celebrate or to the life of Stan Lee, maybe you want to have a Lou Malnati's pizza and watch some Avengers movies. And Mike, I was wondering if anyone knew what Stan Lee's real name was. Mike, what was Stan Lee's real name?
It was Stanley Lieber.
Stanley Lieber. And I was reading up on it. You know, earlier Elliot Serrano mentioned that one of the things that he dreaded was being asked what he did for a living at parties because he was kind of embarrassed to say he was a comic book writer. And Stan Lee, in his autobiography, has said that he changed his name because he thought someday he might write the great American novel, and he didn't want to be associated with this guy who also had done these little rinky-dink comics. So he was saving Stanley Lieber for his great American novel.
Instead, he crafted the great American culture. I mean, the guy's influence is all over.
Isn't that right? There you go. Well, do you have a favorite, Mike?
No, not. I'll be honest. I wasn't a huge fan. Honestly, I was just watching TV today and kind of
saw that
new to name when you called. So
cool.
Or when you asked for it,
well, still so, counts, Mike.
I like pizza.
Excellent. Well, we like you, Mike. So we'll send out a Lou Malnati's pizza. Everyone can visit loumalnati's.com to find out about one of the over 42 Chicagoland locations. Thanks, Mike. Have a great night. And I think after the show tonight, I'm going to go home and watch something by Stan Lee. Maybe a Spider-Man.
I think you're going to have pizza.
I might have. Well, definitely that might happen too. Yeah. Sure. Well, now I want a beer. We talked to our friend from the Bruseum. Yeah. And I also want to find out.
The Bruseum. I'm sorry I missed that.
Yeah,
oh, she was awesome.
I love a pun.
Yeah. It's a great idea for a museum here in Chicago. She's got an exhibit at the Field Museum as well.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. So I might get a brew and watch one of the Stanley creations. Yeah, and pizza. Perfect. Now, I have to know, John, first of all, I asked you if you had been, if you had watched any of the suggestion that Andrea and I shared with you, which was our love for The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
I think, as you probably imagined, I did not partake in this. Although, can I say, Patty, I did watch an episode of Ozark.
Okay.
I gave it another chance.
Yeah, I could see not. A lot of people don't like it.
I just couldn't get completely immersed in it.
Yeah.
I just wanted Patty to know that I tried it again.
Fair
for
enough.
Her. I tried this second season premiere, and maybe I would have liked it, but I fell asleep.
Did you see all of season one?
No.
No.
Oh, well, then that wouldn't really work.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
TV works like that. You can jump in.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer, and I always drop in.
I asked Andrea if I could watch the final season
of House of Cards.
Go ahead.
It's you know what? I watched all of the seasons. I binged one and two, and then maybe one, two, three, and then watched the rest as they were happening. And this one was a little confusing. You know, I had to stop and go, wait, who was that person? Because they brought up he had all these misdeeds. You know, it's not any big secret. It was on for six or seven seasons, maybe eight.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he did all these things, and they brought some of these characters who back from the dead, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. So it was a little bit of a puzzle to follow. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I liked the fact that she was the president. But
I like her hair.
Oh, my God, her hair's fantastic. And her suits.
All good stuff with that body. The body makes the suits and the hair look good.
I mean, that show had already run out of gas even before the spacey stuff went down, I think.
Mm-hmm. I could see. Yeah, I, that's
it
what I heard.
Good.
That's
it what just, I heard. I didn't like how they ended it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
What do you recommend, John?
I have a... semi-half-hearted recommendation.
Oh,
Patty.
Dear. I don't know how to take this.
Yeah, well, I have...
Is this the Romanovs?
No. Although I was just talking about that with someone else earlier.
I've heard half-hearted reviews about that.
Yeah.
Like, even just like, you should watch it, but don't hold it against me if you don't like it kind of a thing.
And I want to ask you guys...
That's exactly right.
And I want to ask you guys about the Julia Roberts one, too.
Oh,
on
okay.
Amazon Prime.
Homecoming or something?
Yes.
Yeah. I heard it was good.
You've been watching it, or you...
I'm 4 episodes in.
Oh, okay.
They're only half an hour episodes.
What was I talking? Oh, I'm going to recommend something right now, right?
Okay,
it's called Forever. Did I talk about it? I didn't talk
I
about this last
so.
Week. Okay,
no.
Thank goodness. It's called Forever. It's on Amazon. Is that right? Yes. And it stars Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph, who you may know from SNL. Fred Armisen from Portlandia.
Yeah.
Sure.
Both two great talents, and they are just delightful in this series, which I don't want to give away too much because it takes a surprising turn after the first couple episodes. But it's about a married couple for whom the spark has been lost and perhaps it was never quite the flame that they hoped it was going to be. They're happy, they're content together, but Maya Rudolph in particular is feeling a little restless. So she proposes that they go on a ski trip this year instead of their usual trip to their lake house, and their lives change dramatically from there. And
maybe I shouldn't give any spoilers away. Where they suggest dating other people?
No.
What series is that?
No, that is, yes.
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, I was just talking about that with someone today. I have seen it.
Yeah.
I'm lost.
I apologize, because now I'm blending different shows that I...
This is not that show, but that show has a little buzz
exist.
Right now.
That exists
and
somewhere.
I'm sorry, I can't recall the title of it.
My apologies. Let's go back to the one
you're
talking
Forever
about.
Is the one I'm talking about.
Okay.
Which there's a bunch of things named Forever on Amazon, so you have to hunt for the picture of Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph standing next to each other. But I recommend it. I will say that the sixth episode, there's 8 episodes, and at the sixth episode... I really didn't enjoy it, but I've talked to a lot of people for whom the sixth is their favorite. It takes a turn. That episode is just constructed differently from the others, and we learn the story of this pair of realtors who were basically two ships passing in the night. I didn't know why we were looking at these people. I didn't understand why we took this detour. A lot of people love it, but I'll say I love Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph in this show, and it is very creative.
That's great.
It looks at life and death in marriage. I'll put it, that's a little cryptic, but I'll put it that way.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, because I'm looking, it's funny, every time I finish watching a series that I really enjoy, I find it hard to want to watch anything else.
I know, because your mind, you're still working through it. Mentally into it.
That's how much binge watching messes me up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it does mess you up. And, you know, the other thing about binge watching is, you know, just by happenstance, I've ended up watching this Forever show, maybe one or two episodes, but then there's about a week in between, which is how we used to watch everything.
Right? Yes.
You're used to watch an episode and have a week to let it sit. There is still some merit, I think, as tempting as it is to let the next episode autoplay.
Yeah.
There is some merit to letting an episode sit and, you know, occupy your thoughts in the shower or in the car once in a while for a week and then come to the next episode.
That's a good
I really
way to put
recommend it.
It
as a way to experience a show more fully and not have everything sort of blur together.
Right. Well, that's a good point. I guess.
God,
I know, but it's hard to resist. I'm just as bad as anyone else.
It is hard. I've binged my last three. I binged Making a Murderer 2, House of Cards, and now I'm kind of binging this Julia Roberts, although I only got 4 episodes in.
Well, tell us about it, though. I haven't seen it.
Okay. It's filmed very cool. I think you guys will appreciate how it's filmed. It reminds me, it's funny because it's set in the past and in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's set earlier in 2018, and then it jumps ahead, I think, 4 years. So, and it's each shot is different. It's portrait and then landscape is how it's shot.
Oh, interesting.
And that's how you know if you're in the future or if you're current. But they dress like they're in the 70s to me. You know, like the clothing they wear, it gives you like this Mad Men 70s feel, which is very just, you know, it's conflicting.
Okay.
The story, okay, I'm 4 episodes in, and I'm kind of like, okay, you're starting to lose me. Get to the point.
Oh,
get
really?
To it. Yeah, they're taking really a long time to get to, like, you know something's amiss, but just get to it.
Yeah.
You know? What is it? What is it that's amiss?
Okay. All right. So I have to see if it's something that...
It's a slow burn is what you're saying.
It is. Yes. It's a good way to put it.
Okay.
It's a slow burn.
Interesting. Now, you said you watched the Making of a Murderer. That's the series...
The part 2, yeah.
Right, the one in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so that they had Making a Murderer, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe longer. And then this is the new one, so it's Making a Murderer Part 2, if you will. And this was, I think, 10 or 12 episodes, which I think went on a couple episodes too long.
But that's what I've heard. But same story, people
same
should know,
story.
As the continuation of the story from the first one.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a big Kathleen Zellner fan. You know, I think she's just a great attorney. And, you know, it's a lot of behind the scenes of watching her work and what, you know, if you like the legal system and, you know, the legalese of it all, it's very, very much about that this
time. Did you watch The Staircase?
Oh, was it with the guy who killed the two wives?
The North Carolina
guy. Yes, I did watch that. And that was too. That was a little too legalese.
That's a lot. That's what I was going to say. That's a lot of behind the scenes legal process.
Yes.
Fascinating, but it is that is also a long journey.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he did it?
I do not.
See, I think he did.
Really? Oh. After watching all of it,
I did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I don't. I.
Right,
you know what?
Stephen
I believe.
Avery did it?
I think. Oh, Stephen Avery,
the Making a Murderer.
That one's tougher for me to deliver a verdict of innocent on. As much as I am compelled by the story, I just, who else would have done it?
That's what Making a Murderer 2 shows you.
Like, oh, really?
She does a reenactment. Like, they lay out who they think did it.
Oh, okay. So I got to watch this.
Yeah.
See, I thought I wouldn't be interested in Making a Murderer 2 because I, you know, these guys then were in the news.
Right.
So I know how their cases played out in terms of verdicts.
Right.
But you're saying there's more.
There
it's
is more.
Worthwhile.
I would absolutely say it's worthwhile.
Okay.
Push through it.
Okay.
It's good. It's good.
Hang
it's
in
a
there.
Slow burn, John.
Another slow burn.
Another slow burn.
Oh, speaking of which, Patty, can I just get one more recommendation?
Yes.
Since we've used this phrase slow burn a few times, I have to say there was a podcast from Slate called Slow Burn. The first season was about the Nixon Watergate scandal. And the second season, which just came out in the past couple months, is about the Clinton impeachment. And I cannot recommend it more highly. Oh. It is fascinating and highly relevant for our times.
Okay.
What's it called?
It's called Slow Burn.
Oh, it is called Slow Burn.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The Nixon season was great. The Clinton season was also great and more immediately relevant
accessible
to our culture.
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
I'm trying to look something up for a listener from the 815. They're asking, when is Peaky Blinders coming back on? So season 5 should be back on. It doesn't say, I don't know when it'll be available for the United States because the BBC often airs things and then it takes a bit for us to get them.
Yeah.
So BBC is going to be airing season 5 next year in 2019. And yes, there is a talk about possibly a movie version, a story of Peaky Blinders. Now, you guys have not seen Peaky Blinders. Mm-hmm. None of you? Tom? Mm-hmm. You're not. Have you seen Peaky Blinders?
Oh, yeah. I'm obsessed with anything dealing with Irish immigrants.
Well, it's a great series, and I thought they did a great job. It was where they left off, I thought, was going in an interesting direction where he's now running.
And Cillian Murphy is just...
Yeah, mesmerizing. There you go. He is. So Peaky Blinders, if you're not familiar with it, that's another one, Andrea, that I would recommend.
I know. I'm going to write that one down, too. Slow Burn and Peaky Blinders.
And, John, I think you've never been interested in checking it out, have you? You know.
Yeah. I'm trying to find out the name of the open marriage series. Because it's driving me crazy now.
All right. Now you have to stay. More after this on 720 WGN. Let us know what you're watching, because I'm always looking for something new to watch. And I don't know that I'll like something until I start. Andrea, I know I mentioned The Haunting of Hill House, but Andrea's delight with it was what drove me to try it again.
Because
the first episode, I was like, it took me till the Theo episode, Touch, was the one where I was like, all right, what's happening next?
Aren't you glad you went back?
I am very glad. John's going to take off. We thank you so much for joining us, John Tatey.
Thanks for having me, Patty.
Wonderful evening.
See you next week.
We will see you next week. Follow him on Twitter at John Tatey. That's TETI. Have a great night, John.
Thanks, Patty.
Of course, more after this on 720 WGN. We'll have more Stanley trivia questions with prizes to give away throughout the rest of the show. At least one more. More in a moment. I like this, whatever this is.
Me too.
I'm enjoying it. Andrea, you and I have been talking throughout the evening, not on the air. Again, someday we'll have to record the off-air conversations.
I know. It's fascinating, isn't it?
But one of the topics you and I have kind of gone back and forth on is the renaming of Chicago's Oriental Theater, which when I thought, because I've always thought it was sort of a strange name that we've hung on to, but I thought, well, maybe it's just out of tradition, and that's fine, and people recognize it. But then when I heard they were going to name it, I thought, okay, this could be interesting, right?
Yes.
What are some of the
the other theater names? We have the Chicago Theater.
We have the Chicago. We have Steppenwolf, Victory Gardens, Cadillac Palace.
Cadillac Palace, right.
That's one downtown here. There's so many wonderful theaters in Chicago. And I know a lot get renamed, you know, like our friends at Stage 773, you know, that used to be many, many years ago a different name.
The Ballywick.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so there have been a lot of name changes, but after 92 years, the name of the Oriental Theater is disappearing.
I need like a drum roll before you let people know who have not yet heard what the grand new name for the Oriental Theater. Do we have any sort of sound effect that we can use for that? I don't know what we can use. Let me see what I've got, if I have anything. I'm sure I have something in here. I think that it needs some sort of, something, right? Do I have a drum roll? I have tap dancing. Okay. There you go.
That might be fitting.
Yeah, I don't know. I have maybe the. All right,
that's good.
I don't know if it's someone we want to have on the show, so I don't want to insult them. So, here, I got it.
There we go. Okay.
The new name
is the James M. Niederlander Theater. Now, Broadway in Chicago is owned by entities controlled by Mr. Niederlander. He's the president of the Niederlander Organization and the son of the late James M. Niederlander. They're a famous family business and live entertainment. They've owned theaters in Chicago, New York, Detroit, and other cities. And the family name has never adorned a loop marquee. Now, in the case of the Schubert Theater, the formerly known as the Schubert Theater, now the CIBC Theater, the Niederlanders have owned and operated that theater since the 1990s, but first did so under their name of their arch rivals, the Schuberts. But now, for the first time, they will get their marquee name on a loop theater.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yes.
So are you going to call it the full name, the James L. Niederlander Theater? Like I could see the Barrymore Theater in New York, like that. So I
still say the Schubert, though, because my mom worked at Inland Steel for 35 years at Dearborn and Monroe. And she'd always say, okay, pick me up in front of the Schubert. So that's just habit. I still sometimes say the Schubert. And that's had three or four different names since then anyway. It's kind of like Comiskey.
Right.
I still say Comiskey.
So are you but I think that if they'd called it the James Theater, that would have been a nice. Don't you think that the James sounds regal?
Very regal.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Although we could call it the Jimmy.
The Jimmy. We could call it the Jimmy
Theater.
Yeah, the Jimmy Theater.
But because the James L. M. Niederlander Theater is a mouthful.
It is. I think that they might just say let's go to the Niederlander. Maybe they will say the James.
I think the James. 312-981-7200. It's not up to us. But what are you going to call it?
What about the Jimmy?
The Jimmy.
The Jimmy. Yeah.
I think the Jimmy is good. The Jimmy Ned. How about Jimmy Ned?
Jimmy Ned's.
The Jimmy Ned?
So there I was at Jimmy Ned's. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I've just seen the most spectacular show.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And you know what? Things have to change sometimes.
Yes.
So
that's fine. Things change.
And,
it's going to be a mouthful, though.
It's going to be a mouthful. The Oriental was a historic name, but now is viewed as patronizing, objectifying, and offensive. And the theater was designed to transport ordinary, hardworking Chicagoans to fantastical realms. The original Oriental Theater had an exotic decor. In this case, it was with South Asian motifs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the original reason behind the name. So I don't know.
No, I didn't know this. So in the late 70s, the it's still called the Oriental. The Oriental Theater was in disrepair. It closed in 1981 for 15 years before it was restored and reopened as the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater.
Right.
In 1998. And now we just refer to it as the Oriental.
Yeah, I wonder why we never call it the Ford.
I think Ford theaters generally have a little bit of a bad rap.
You know what? I was just going to say that, right?
It's a good point.
Very true. Yeah, might attract a lot of people.
You don't want to sit in that box seat, Mr. Mm-mm. Lincoln. Mm-mm. Let's take a break here. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN. We have been talking about the passing of Stan Lee, celebrating his life and the impact he's had on so many of our lives. And maybe it's not a big deal to you. Maybe you just know some of the trivia. That doesn't mean that you're out of the running for one of our prizes tonight. We have a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree. You can stop by Treetime Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington to pick out a theme of your choice while supplies last. But if you know the answer to our Stan Lee trivia question, Stan Lee is known for creating some of the world's
world's most well-known superheroes, but he didn't work alone. Which comic book artist helped Stan create Spider-Man and Doctor Strange? 312-981-7200 if you know the answer. And Elliot, you do not qualify because you were a friend of the show.
Yes, you can know it.
312-981-7200 is the number. Now, Andrea, you and I have talked a little bit about whether or not, well, it seems as though the legalization of recreational marijuana is imminent in this,
yes,
in the state of Illinois now that J.B. Pritzker has won. And there seemed to be a consensus among many of our legislators even before he won that perhaps that's the direction we should move in.
Right.
Whether it's because revenue and jobs and people are doing it anyway, we should be able to tax it and monitor it and have it be safer for people rather than going on the black market, and also the legal system and putting people away for marijuana use.
Right.
So I think I've told you I am definitely for expanding medical marijuana, mm-hmm, use. Mm-hmm. I do understand the push to go recreational. I just don't know, and I mentioned this to Tom in the office, I don't know if Illinoisans are ready to get high. It's not, and I know that people say, oh, I smell people, smoking up downtown. It smells skunk all the time.
Yeah.
This is different,
yeah,
when you make it accessible the way alcohol is, mm-hmm, I think.
No, I agree. And keep in mind, then if this happens, you have to regulate it just like you would alcohol.
Right.
So if you are pulled over and you take a field sobriety test and you're either drinking alcohol or you're high on marijuana, that's still driving under the influence.
But you can, if you've had a drink, as long as you haven't had too much.
Right.
The thing with marijuana is they don't have that technology right now in order to quantify how much you've had or when it was even in your system.
Yeah, and you know what? There was the Tribune did a story on this, I want to say at least a week or maybe two ago, and I'll search for it, but right, how they said that the accidents involving a high usage of marijuana are on the rise.
Or that's the thing.
They're more... it is still a drug. It can still impair you.
Which is why I think something like making a pot infused beer,
yes,
is going to be very confusing for people.
I think so too, right?
Right, Tom?
Well, especially because from what I gleaned from that report, they're putting, I believe, 20 milligrams.
5 milligrams
or
of THC.
5 milligrams. Okay, thank God. Because yeah, someone told me it was going to be, no, they're going to do 20. I'm like, that's going to turn you into a Grateful Dead fan overnight.
So it's like, going to be, it's the creators of Blue Moon are going to make it has no alcohol, but it will be a beverage infused with 5 milligrams of THC, which is the high-producing ingredient found in the cannabis plants, made with blood orange peel and coriander. So it's like the same ale that you're familiar with. The thing is, if you have 4 of them, though...
Then you have 20.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Right. And that's the problem.
Now, I'm not... switching gears, let's go to make sure we get to our winner who knew the answer to which comic book artist helped create Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. Who is it, Tim, from Lockport?
Steve Ditko.
Is that correct? It's so funny? I'm like, wait a minute. That's not the name I had in my mind. I thought it was Jim Kirby.
You thought it was Jack Kirby.
Jack Kirby.
It was actually Steve Ditko who did Spider-Man and Doctor Strange.
I would have gotten it wrong. Congratulations, Tim. You've won a... I have to put you on hold because we have an echo when I talk to you. See, watch. See if I do this. I sound like my superpower is that I can't control my voice. Thank you so much, Tim. Congratulations. Again, you've won a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree. Everyone stop by Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington to pick out the team theme of your choice while supplies last. So, yeah, I don't want to sound like a goody two-shoes. I'm just a little bit worried for my neighbors.
Yes.
I'm not that well-versed in what my body can handle when it comes to trying recreational marijuana.
Right.
I don't know that I'm just a little... I would rather we eased into this.
Like, I agree.
Expanding medical marijuana use,
right,
like they did in California.
Mm-hmm.
People seem... You get it for everything. My eye twitches. I don't sleep well. My back hurts. My shoulder hurts.
Yeah.
I stubbed my toe. They seem to be... It was for all intents and purposes.
Right.
It was already recreational, but at least you had to check in with a doctor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's still a part of me that I think that is valid. I really do.
I know that people get mad at me.
It's just, cigarettes are even regulated. You have to be a certain age to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Marijuana, I'm sure you're going to have to be 18, maybe 21.
Oh, God. Right. That's another question. What should be the age?
What's going to be the legal age?
I would say it's got to be 21.
And they're going to, they, if, truly, you're right. There's going to have to be more research into this instead of just like, yep, it's legal.
Well, so right, and the 708 says, I don't think driving after smoking pot will be any different than what it is today after it's legal, and that might be the case. Only people aren't only going to be smoking it.
Right.
When you digest it,
right,
you process it differently.
Yes, that's very true. If you ingest it like as a gummy or right. you know or
a brownie,
absolutely.
Or
it will impair you
yeah.
in some way.
And for some people, they don't like, they're like, oh, I'm fine after an hour. Now you're behind the wheel an hour and a half later and it hits you. You're like, I don't know what's happening.
Even if, you know, like Cochran used to make the joke about, okay, you know, four people smoking pot, they all come to a stop sign, they all stop and they all turn. No one moves because they all want to let each other go because they're so chill.
Right.
Okay, yes, you can't do that either.
Mm-mm.
You can't just sit at a green light.
Yeah.
Or at a stop sign.
I am a little bit concerned, but I think that's an interesting venture that Blue Moon is taking. That's the thing, is that a lot of very industrious, entrepreneurs are going to find ways to break into the market. And
right.
Blue Moon, the creator of Blue Moon, is trying to do so.
Yeah.
They have, like, in other towns, they have pot-infused pizzas already, which seems weird, because if you eat pot-infused pizza, what are you supposed to do after you've had the pizza?
I don't know.
Because you can't have more pot.
Have chips. Make sure there's chips nearby.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, no kidding. Another thing in the story, too, it says federal law prohibits brewers from using marijuana in beer, but this particular beverage doesn't contain alcohol.
Right.
So it's technically not a beer.
It's not a beer. It's ale.
It's an ale.
I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know. So it's going to be, let's see, the Belgian White will be available in individual bottles, costing about $9. So a four-pack of pot ale will cost $36.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a reason for not buying it. I mean, seriously.
Well, and again, because people aren't necessarily familiar with, look, when I look at the menu and it says that, let's say an ale has 4.2% alcohol, you know, I know, I have a vague idea of what that's going to do compared to, like, let's say there's some stouts I saw on a menu one day that had 18.2.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy.
Right, I know.
You know.
There's some super strong drinks.
But you have an idea of how alcohol is going to hit you in different ways.
Yes, absolutely. So you know they have one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Or three.
Do you think that expanding it, is it enough to say we're going to make money off of it?
Probably.
Right.
I mean, don't you? If it's $36 for four.
Yeah, people are going to make some money.
Yeah, people are going to make some serious money off that.
Let's open a pot shop, Andrea.
Yeah, okay.
What would we call it?
I don't think I could do that. I don't think I'd want to do that. But I do know people who have done that. I know.
It's like having a liquor store.
Exactly.
This is just different. I know. Like, I remember when there was a medical marijuana dispensary opening in our neighborhood. People got very angry. They're like, oh, crime's going to go up over here.
Yeah.
Nobody even knows that it's there.
Right. I know.
It's just like another building on the block.
Yeah.
Next to the alderman's office.
Right.
The smarter move would be to open like a Dairy Queen next to one.
There you go, right?
Oh, yeah. See,
or like a fast food restaurant.
Secondary
yeah.
businesses.
With like a dollar menu, like dollar fries,
bingo.
Dollar chips.
That sounds really, would you order a dollar chip store?
Oh, I would order a dollar food, sure.
Is that what you would open?
Yeah.
I wonder how the...
A cheap fast food store.
There you go. Tacos? I think tacos.
Tacos. That's
everyone
it.
Everyone likes a taco.
Yep.
I mean, have you been to Burrito King like at 2 in the morning? People go nuts.
Taco Burrito Palace number 2?
Oh, there's so
crazy,
many of them.
I know.
Tom's doing a cheering motion in the
right,
booth.
Right, and La Bamba. But I think that's gone now.
Is it gone from Champagne?
Yeah, but they had one at Halsted and not Wellington. Was it Wellington?
Oh, was there one here?
Yeah, I think it closed.
Burrito's as big as your head. I always thought that was a little daunting.
It was Wrightwood, Halsted and Wrightwood.
Oh, boy. Let's see. What's the difference between drinking a 15% glass of wine and what? I don't know what the difference is of something else.
Between what? Wine and pot?
I don't know. Between drinking a 15% glass of wine, I don't know what the counter question is.
Okay, that's what they would have to test. And
yeah.
Everybody's different. Yeah. You know, male, female, your weight
exactly.
plays into it, too.
708 says, the gummies make me clean house. I'm 63 and I have rheumatoid arthritis and I also have been smoking on and off since I was 15. My doctor is aware that I smoke. Is it too much money to go through the process for medical? Oh, it is. They have a, there's a whole process you have to go through
oh, yeah.
to have a card in order to have access to medical marijuana. So the difference between drinking a 15% glass of wine and an 18% of beer. Well, it's just a higher alcohol content.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to hit you. Well, 3% isn't going to make that much of a difference. But between 4.2% glass of beer, it's like having three
beers, right?
Four. It's like having four beers in one.
So it'll affect you more and it'll affect you faster, I would think, depending on your weight.
It felt nice. Hey, Ed, what do you want to tell us about the dispensaries in Vegas?
Oh, very nice. I mean, upscale. Everything was clean. It wasn't like some scum thing. It was almost better than going to a doctor. You have a personal individual that went with you. He explained everything that went on. You could have meat, you could have gummies, you could have pills, you could have this, that, lotions. And it wasn't like a bunch of slimy people there. It was very upscale, very nice dressed people. And it's only good for us. And I've heard, look, Canada okayed it a couple weeks ago, yep. And they ran out of weed.
Yeah. Did they really run out?
Find that hard.
Yes, the dispensaries?
Oh, that's
and
funny.
And I am stocking it, and I love it.
That's but, now, Ed, was it a medical marijuana dispensary you went to, or was it recreational? Is it
Vegas is recreational.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so have you enjoyed using any marijuana in the past? I don't know if I'm getting you in trouble. I don't know if we should go.
It's been 30 years.
Okay.
And I went for some oil for my feet, and it didn't work, so I spent $40. It was a waste. But the group I went with, everybody enjoyed it. Everybody was fine, and they didn't go kill anybody. And it was great.
So wait, it didn't have any effect on you? Is that what you said?
No.
Aw, that's a bummer. We said, like, this is going to be weird when you're in Vegas. You're hanging out with your friends. You go to a dispensary, and you're just, like, waiting for it any minute now. Any minute now.
Right.
I'm going to feel it.
No, I monitored them. I was the supervisor, so I would be somewhat dull, if you could call it that, in the group. But, in a half hour, 5 minutes, they were giggling, having fun. Nobody got hurt. And by the pool, by the machines, and, it was great. And it's perfect.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for letting us know.
It's a money thing. That's where your state is at.
Yeah, that's what the 815 says. This will be the best thing Illinois can do to raise money but not raise taxes. Don't worry, we can all drive on it or not. And someone else recommends that we call it Patty's Pop Shop with Andrea Darla.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Okay, girls, have a good night.
Thank you, Ed.
Bye, Ed.
Be well.
Bye.
All right. I don't know. Just
that's funny.
Everyone just chill in your own way.
Yeah.
More in a moment. Tell us what's making you happy. Come on, get happy when we come back. 312-981-7200. What's making you happy? It's got to be something. At the end of the day, no matter what happens, something that makes you smile. More after this.
It's better a little love and it will keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together.
At the end of the day, no matter what's happened, you can always find something to make you smile. I've been working with a young man who's helping me try to figure out the business end of a company I have called With Kind Words. I do presentations and consulting, and he's this kid who came on and said, hey, I'll figure out different ways to brand and market you. He's in between, from college, trying to find a new job, and today he found out he has a full-time job, and I'm very excited for him. And I don't know if David is going to be able to still work with me, he's got a job, and he was so proud and excited today. It's just a great moment when you see someone go, okay, I'm moving in the right direction. So isn't that great when you see
full-time
a young person?
Gig.
Yeah, he's like 22 years old.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's just trying to find his way in life.
That is so cool.
It is neat to see, the world through someone. I mean, we were talking last night about millennials. So this kid's a Gen Z, right?
Okay, so so that's after millennials,
22,
right?
Yeah, they're younger than millennials.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what is millennial, 25 to 35?
Okay, so it turns out we think the upper end is 36, 22 to 36.
Oh, okay.
But I got a text last night. My husband told me today that he believes it goes as high as 38 years old, that the oldest birth.
It depends.
It depends.
That seems kind of high.
It depends on who you're asking.
Because
I thought 30,
no.
I thought 35 was the cutoff.
I thought like 34 was the cutoff.
Yeah.
But Michael Palasek wants to put himself in with the millennials.
No way.
He's 36. So that makes him a millennial. He's in the drop zone.
So he's the one ruining. He's not buying diamonds or houses.
There you go. That's right.
Ruining chilies.
That's right.
God.
Yeah. No, that's the thing is that they've ruined all those. They want things that are more experiential, more real, I guess, is where millennials are driving everything.
See, I thought it was. All right. So what's the young end?
25?
Oh, 22.
It is 22. I thought. So he's like 21. So he's just like in that Gen Z.
So 22 to 35. 36. Okay.
All right. That's
Boy, that's a big span. And then Gen X is 35 to 50.
Right?
Is that right? Because the baby boomers are
36 to 50? No, they're Gen Y. Gen Y is 36 to something, right?
I don't know. I thought it was Gen X.
Well, who's Gen Y? Gen Z,
We're
Gen X.
We have to look this up.
Yeah, it's all a lot of.
The boomers are, like, the youngest baby boomer is, what, 55 now?
Yes. That seems right.
Okay.
Glad we figured this out.
Wait,
what was your point? Wait, you didn't have a point.
No,
he's not a millennial.
He's a Gen Z.
He's a Gen Z.
He's younger than millennial. And I feel like that's it. I think Griffin is then in the Gen Z. Okay, never mind. Let's not get hooked up on that because we're in the middle of tell me something
good.
Make me happy. This 630 says, great show as always. My something good is today my son who turned 8 months. I can't believe he's already that old. I love you, Corey Coben Taylor. Oh, that's very sweet. Hi, Chris in Elk Grove. Very sweet. Tell me something good. What's making you happy, Andrea?
Oh, my something good is, well, I'm excited now talking about Thanksgiving and seeing all my cousins next week. Which I'm super excited about because my cousin Mike had heart surgery last week. He got out of the hospital yesterday, and we're going to be seeing him on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that'd be so scary.
Yeah. Oh, and he's young, too. Yeah. So he had a valve replacement, but he's doing great.
I'm glad he's doing well.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see the family and had a great day off yesterday. I was telling you in the elevator, I slept for 9.5 hours.
Isn't that great?
Which I hadn't done in... Oh my God, at least a year.
That's a wonderful
that's
thing.
It's like twice as much sleep as I normally get. So
and what
great.
Do you think kept you asleep the whole time? Because like, do you think it was just knowing that you didn't have to get up early?
Isn't that crazy?
The freedom of it?
Knowing that I didn't have to set an alarm or didn't have to, because I set an alarm on the weekends too.
When was the last time, was it the first time you'd gone to sleep without an alarm in the last year? Is that why?
Probably. I had a day off a couple of months ago.
Even like on your vacation, you don't set your alarm on vacation.
No.
Good.
But I usually wake up. Strangely, right. I used to wake up at 7:20. Isn't that weird?
Weird.
It was just consistently. I know. It's too much work.
The 847 says their good thing is that they just saw Michelle Obama. Well, I hope you had a good time.
Oh, yeah. Daphne was going to see her, too.
Oh, that's right. She was leaving. I thought you meant Dr. Daphne.
No, Daphne Ortiz.
I was like, she came into town and didn't tell me.
Did you see Michelle Obama was signing books today in Hyde Park, her book in Hyde Park today. And it was so cool. She did one interview with Val Warner from Windy City Live.
That's the only interview she did.
Yeah. So we
Thanks,
all got,
Michelle. Whatever.
I know. So she actually, they were sending that audio through AP and kind of like a pool feed. So we got to hear a little bit of it. And when she was at that bookstore, it was so cool. I thought just to see the little girls. Yeah. Obviously, they're from Chicago. Uh-huh. They're going up and she's taking time to talk with the kids and shake their hands. And I love that.
She also stopped at her alma mater. She went to Whitney Young High School. She stopped by there to talk to some of the students. And I believe I heard that she was at Peyton last week as well.
Really?
Yeah. So that was very cool.
I think we're going to see a lot more of them with the Obama Foundation going up.
I think so too. Tom, before we throw to the break, tell me your something good.
My something good is that I will be soon celebrating 6 years with my beautiful girlfriend, Lauren.
Aww.
We met freshman year of college. I thought, I was like, okay, I'll play it casual. And then 6 years later, here we are.
Still casual?
Just super casual.
Yeah.
Now she's my best friend in the whole world.
Aww. What's her name again?
Lauren.
Hey, Lauren. Oh, that's lovely. That was a good one. All right, no one can follow that. More in a moment on 720 WGN.